Americans getting to Israel.
As protests erupt in Israel, acclaimed author Sally Rooney says she will fund the proscribed terror group Palestine Action. Is she asking to be arrested? And
you're gambling with the lives of millions of people. You're gambling with World War III.
It's a Euro showdown. Keir Starmer flying into Washington, D.C. with other European leaders to persuade the president to back Ukraine. Trump says Zelensky can end the war now by handing over territory. But is that appeasement?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Ukraine's President Zelensky has arrived in Washington for crucial talks with President Trump at the White House later. Ahead of the meeting, Donald Trump has said Volodymyr Zelensky could end the war with Russia almost immediately if he wants to. Reports suggest Ukraine could be offered a potential NATO-style defence arrangement without joining the alliance. Professor of US and International Politics Scott Lucas has told LBC it could be a significant development.
Ukraine all along has said, look, we need to make sure that Russia cannot attack us again, that there's not a second full-scale invasion. That means that Ukraine, without formally joining NATO, has to get assurances from European partners and from the United States that they've got military cooperation. Now, for the first time, the Trump administration is saying that it is willing to consider that.
Israel has seen one of its largest protests overnight since the start of the war in Gaza. Demonstrators gathered in Tel Aviv calling for a deal to free hostages and end the conflict. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has criticized the protests, though saying they will only harden Hamas's stance. Middle East expert Professor Nick Westcott has told LBC unrest is continuing to grow in Israel.
There's quite a growing divide within Israeli opinion. There are the far-right supporters of the current government, and they are firmly behind the more aggressive stance that Netanyahu is taking. But there has been, from the outset, protesters saying we should prioritize getting our hostages back. The Israeli public is becoming increasingly concerned about the perpetual escalation of the war.
A 35-year-old man is continuing to be questioned on suspicion of murder following the death of a woman in East London at the weekend. Police say she was attacked in Romford in the early hours of Saturday and died at the scene. More patients in England will be able to get checks and scans out of hours as part of plans to improve accessibility to healthcare. Ministers say 100 community diagnostic centres are now staying open 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. The hubs form part of the government's 10-year health plan aimed at cutting wait times and bringing care closer to the community. And figures suggest 8 pubs shut their doors for good across the UK every week over the first half of 2025. Official government data shows 209 were demolished or converted for other uses in the 6 months to June. Reasons cited for closure include rising tax and labour costs. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 91.38. It closed down 38 on Friday. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather. Cloudy to start for many, but widespread sunshine developing later. The risk of a few heavy showers in the southwest, highs of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
To be honest, work had been a slog. I'm a designer, but some nights I was chasing invoices like my full-time job. Now Sage Copilot chases my invoices for me. I just need to click a button and it's done. And I get paid 1 week faster.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience helping real businesses like Sophia at Solver Design. That's more than artificial intelligence, that's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. Working with 21 customers, each round payments came in 7 days faster with Sage Copilot. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick.
Very good morning to you. 3 minutes past seven the time. Tom Swarbrick in for Nick Ferrari at breakfast here on LBC this Monday morning. Hope we find you very well indeed. Coming up, after protests at hotels, one council now complains that they've been left in the dark by central government after discovering 50 HMOs, houses of multiple occupancy, for asylum seekers were set up in the city of Portsmouth. Why weren't the council told? We'll speak to a minister. Plus.
What you're kind of doing here is borrowing some young people from some NHS work experience, basically punishing the children for the parents' choices.
A vital NHS training route for potential new doctors bars private school pupils from entry, with priority given to those attending state schools. Is that a reasonable adjustment? And... what are we going to call it? Should we call it line dancing? We'll call it line dancing. Reports that the police are called into Strictly after potential cocaine use.
Call 0345 6060 973. Tweet at LBC. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Very good morning to you. This hour...
you're gambling with the lives of millions of people. You're gambling with World War III. And what you're doing is very disrespectful to the country, this country.
It is a wartime crisis meeting. The heads of major European powers, Britain, France and Germany, marching into the Oval Office today to demand that President Trump gives security guarantees to Ukraine and that President Putin is not appeased by any decision to hand over large swathes of eastern Ukraine. Overnight, President Trump reiterating his view that Ukraine cannot join NATO, something that Keir Starmer and others have previously said Ukraine was on an irreversible path towards, but that America would offer a NATO-like guarantee of security. Also on the agenda today is the carving up of eastern Ukraine that President Putin wants to see. Would agreeing to that demand be a form of appeasement? We'll get the view from Ukraine in just a moment. First, Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor, is live in the studio with me this morning. Major, major, major moment this, Natasha. Why is Keir Starmer going?
Yes, Tom. So a flurry of European leaders, like you say, descending on Washington today to back Zelensky. Starmer, Macron, Merz, Maloney, the NATO boss, Mark Rutte, von der Leyen, all descending today in Washington for this summit. In the last few hours, Zelensky has also touched down. Why? Well, firstly, it's a very public show of support. Downing Street believes that standing alongside him sends an important message, not just to Donald Trump, but to Putin, that security for Ukraine is important, of course, not just for them, but for Europe too. They say that he's also standing true to his commitments to stand by Ukraine for as long as it takes. But secondly, the White House have invited these yes. leaders to be there. And it's important to note, this isn't just Zelensky bringing along his posse for a fun ride. This is because the White House knows that they need to get European leaders on side in order to do this deal. Trump obviously wants to do it. And third, of course, like you just heard from that Oval Office clash, to stop that from ever happening again. And of course, after Friday's Alaska summit ended with no agreement, we do have a few possible green shoots of a possible deal, a possible way forward. And over the weekend, we have had a big development, one big win for Downing Street. Peace envoy Steve Witkoff saying, yes, there can be an American security style guarantee for a peace deal if the Ukrainians can live without being in NATO.
The United States and other European nations could effectively offer Article 5-like language to cover a security guarantee. Putin has said that a red flag is NATO admission, which is one of the real reasons why Ukraine wants to be in NATO. We sort of were able to bypass that and get an agreement that the United States could offer Article 5 protection, which was the first time we had ever heard the Russians agree to that.
What a NATO guarantee of security, or a NATO-like guarantee of security, looks like, we'll get into the details of a bit later, Natasha. But what is Downing Street saying about any outcomes from today?
So they see that Article 5 comment as a big step forward. And Starmer, of course, we know, has been pushing for that American backstop for months. They're not hugely optimistic of a major deal that's going to be done today. They say this is part of ongoing talks. They say that there is more to come. But what they want, I think, no Oval Office bust up, Europe showing that they are behind Ukraine and united, President Zelensky that isn't going to be completely embarrassed in front of Donald Trump and in front of the world stage, talks ongoing and not blowing up. And I think they will also want some details on what a ceasefire looks like, whether Donald Trump really has done a U-turn on that, because he's now not talking about a ceasefire anymore, and what also the details about what this Article 5 style promise will actually look like in practice.
Natasha, thank you very much indeed. Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor, setting up a very big day in Washington. 8 minutes past seven now, McElvoy joins us, executive editor of Politico, co-host of the podcast Politics at Sam and Anne's. Thanks for coming on, Anne. How are we going to know that this will have been a success, this meeting with Zelensky and European leaders? Morning to you.
Good morning. Well, I think we'd know it had been, let's say, a relative success, because obviously it's still a meeting, we shouldn't forget, which is put Russia on an equal footing there with Donald Trump and with the US after it has pursued its war aims by, you know, walking into the country next door and an immense bloodshed and death and suffering along the way. But from where we are in practical terms, as Natasha was saying, they have accepted and even welcomed, I think, that the Europeans have turned up mob-handed. I've compared it like the Three Musketeers, though I think by this stage it's about six or seven, all for one and one for all. I think Donald Trump wants a deal that will stick. So for a deal to stick, the Europeans have to back it. I think success would look like getting that Article 5 kind of language, that an attack on one is an attack on all, and that countries would then be able to respond. The trouble is that if you've seen Donald Trump saying he's not really prepared to back Ukraine with any more spending and weapons at scale, you know, why would he back it down the line if Russia were to decide to reinvade? You know, does it kick the can down the road? What is it possibly intended more for a time after Donald Trump? That opens a bit of a window to Ukraine to pursue its goals by other ends.
Trump has talked about Zelensky having the whip hand in ending this conflict, particularly when it comes to land. Do you think fundamentally that this is only going to end if Zelensky agrees to hand over quite a lot of mineral-rich Donbass region in eastern Ukraine?
Well, that is the Russian request. I'm rather suspicious that it's anything to do with minerals. It's about, for the Kremlin thinks very much in future strategy terms. Not only would he have to hand over the two-thirds of Donbass, more or less, that is controlled at the moment, and Luhansk region that's controlled by Russian forces, but you have to add a third of the territory of Donbass that is not controlled by Russian forces. I think people forget that. They say it's in Russian hands anyway, but some of it isn't. And I think the real reason for that, it's certainly a coal-rich area, and that has some advantages. But the minerals, I mean, nobody really knows the value, how difficult to extract them, etc. Mm-hmm. So I think that's more, if you like, a Donald Trump trading kind of line. What Putin wants is to say, I took a big chunk off Ukraine. It's now Russia. And frankly, to his military guys, they'll be saying, if we ever do need to go back in again, then we've got a place where we can access. Awesome. It's a very easier route into eastern Ukraine and through to the center and west of Ukraine if you control that part of the country, for sure.
And thank you very much indeed. Anne McElvoy, executive editor of Politico. 11 past 7, the time. Svetlana Moronets is a Ukrainian journalist and a staff writer at The Spectator, who wrote on Saturday, Putin was the real winner of the Alaska summit. Thanks for coming on the programme, Svetlana. Zelensky is saying that it would be unconstitutional for Ukraine to hand over the land that Putin wants. Donald Trump doesn't buy that, though, does he?
Yes, he doesn't. But in Ukraine, the constitution says that for changing any border, there needs to be a referendum in Ukraine. So Zelensky really doesn't have the power to give any land to Russia. So I think tonight he will be insisting on just freezing the fighting along the front line and not withdrawing from the territories Russia couldn't capture in 12 years of war.
That would be closer to a ceasefire, though, wouldn't it? Which is something that Trump has ruled out, or he wants to move straight to peace.
Well, freezing the fighting along the front line could be the final peace deal if Ukraine receives the security guarantees that it won't be attacked by Russia again.
How could that guarantee be surefire in the way that Ukraine thought previous security guarantees were?
So I think the European troops will have to be on the ground, that coalition of the willing monitoring the front line, and also there has to be some kind of backing from the US. Ukrainians are very afraid that it will be another Budapest memorandum where they give up nuclear weapons in exchange for security guarantees, but in the end it was just a piece of paper. And Zelensky still doesn't know what Trump is proposing. What are the NATO Article 5 like security guarantees his team is talking about? So tonight his job will be to find out what actually is Trump putting over the table.
How willing do you think this Euro coalition should be to put troops into Ukraine as part of a Ukrainian guarantee?
Well, it seems that there is already a plan, and Britain said that they already ready to put the troops on the ground as soon as the fighting stops. So I think it's really good progress. We just need to see it happen.
As a Ukrainian yourself, I wonder how you feel about what's coming up over the course of the next few hours. Trepidation, nervousness, Exhaustion.
Terrified. It looks like Trump's peace through strength strategy is to pressure the victim of the aggression and not the aggressor. And I just hope that tonight won't turn out as the Oval meeting of, as the meeting in the Oval Office in February. And I feel very grateful that European leaders are coming together with Zelensky to support Ukraine, because Ukraine's security is European security. And hopefully they will be able to convince Trump not to force Ukraine to accept Putin's terms.
Really good to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed for coming on. Svetlana Moronets is Ukrainian journalist, staff writer at The Spectator. The piece on Saturday: Putin was the real winner of the Alaska summit. Whether he's going to be the real winner of this summit at the White House later today, we are yet to find out. You've already heard about the NATO-like guarantee of security that the Americans are willing to commit to. What does that look like? No idea. Maybe that does mean that this country, we now need to prepare for a security guarantee for Ukraine that would involve British troops being in Ukraine in order to protect it from Russian aggression. And then there's the question of land. Putin invaded. He is responsible for it. Donald Trump doesn't seem to completely believe that, but Putin invaded. He is responsible for that war. If this war is ended by handing him the territory that he says he wants, is that not appeasement? Or is that the practical way of getting this war ended so that thousands of lives can be protected? 0345 6060 973. If you are Ukrainian, I'd love to know how you're feeling ahead of this meeting later on today, whether we're going to get a repeat of those terrible scenes in the Oval Office back in February when Zelensky was last there, or whether Donald Trump is going to come round to a European way of viewing this, which is that, actually, Putin was the aggressor. Get to your calls in a few moments' time. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Coming up...
I'm paying for it privately. This is going to have a huge impact on my monthly outgoings.
The cost of Mounjaro is spiking. You were paying £122 a month privately. It's now gone up to, well, we'll tell you in a moment, but it's leading to a heck of a lot of knockoff jabs on the market. We'll get into the details of that after the 7:16 news headlines on LBC. Dominic Ellis.
Ukraine's President Zelensky has arrived in Washington ahead of crucial talks with President Trump later. Israel has seen one of its largest protests overnight since the start of the war in Gaza. And more patients in England will be able to get checks and scans out of hours as part of plans to improve accessibility to healthcare. LBC weather: cloudy to start for many, widespread sunshine developing later, the risk of a few heavy downpours in the southwest, highs of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the underground, because of a track problem at Whitechapel, the Circle Line is suspended, no service both ways. The District Line can't run between Tower Hill and West Ham, and the Hammersmith and City Line isn't running between Liverpool Street and Barking. Also on the underground, there are severe delays on the Bakerloo Line, and also on London Overground, the Mild May Line is suspended between Kensington Olympia and Clapham Junction, and also Southern can't run between Clapham Junction and Watford Junction. On the roads, very busy on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 26 at Waltham Abbey to 25 at the A10. That's all down to an accident, and Westminster Bridge remains closed in both directions because of an ongoing investigation.
This is LBC.
Morrison's MoreCard customers, play our Wheel of Prizes game in the MoreCard app today. Spend just £10 in-store or online to unlock a spin. Win big prizes like a year's free shopping worth a whopping £3,000. To free goodies like our classic Market Street donuts. Play now on the MoreCard app.
Morrison's, to shop at Morrison's.
MoreCard app required. 18 plus. Excludes Morrison's Daily, Deliveroo and Amazon. T's and C's apply. See online for details. End 24th of August.
LBC.
Simone combined her old pensions with Pension B.
So I had multiple pensions from various jobs that I have been in, and every 6 months or so I would receive a statement, and I was losing track of all my different pensions and all the different statements. I just wanted one easy way of keeping them all in one place.
At Pension B, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionb.com and be pension confident. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Who's a good human? Jenny is, because Jenny will always do what's best for Bertie, her bestie Bassett. So if Bertie needs to go and wee, that's what they're going to do. Even if it is 3 a.m. and it's raining cat lots. That's why she also chooses Butternut Box for Bertie's meals. Freshly prepared, served straight from the fridge, and conveniently delivered right to your door. At a time that suits you for once. Hey, Jenny.
Oh.
Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
Book a free hearing test today at bootshearingcare.com and save up to £300 with our free technology upgrade. Boots, with you for life. T's and C's apply. See website for details.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
Morning to you, 20 past 7 the time. Tom Swarbrick here on LBC ahead of a massive day for European negotiations with the President of the United States over the future of Ukraine. It's almost as if President Zelensky is kind of bringing his bodyguards with him to this meeting. A bodyguard in the form of Keir Starmer, you may or may not think that's a good idea, but Keir Starmer is going, Olaf Scholz is going, President Macron is going, Ursula von der Leyen. I mean, the whole team, the crew, is heading with Zelensky to the White House this afternoon for meetings with Donald Trump after the summit in Alaska on Friday. The issues seem to be over the security guarantee that the US would provide Ukraine in the event that Russia would invade again or encroach into Ukraine's territory again, and over land. What is Russia now? What is Ukraine now? And you know what the demands from Putin are. He wants large parts of eastern Ukraine to become, in that sense, Russian. And those large parts of eastern Ukraine are not under particular Russian control. There are areas of the eastern part of Ukraine that Ukrainians have, that they are controlling, that they are fighting over. So the idea of Zelensky giving up land that he hasn't lost feels closer to appeasement than should be the case for a man that has invaded that country. It is Putin's fault that this war began. 0345 6060973 is the number. Of course, the other view is this isn't a particular European war. The other view says that this is a sort of kind of localized regional conflict that is drawing in European countries for a proxy war that is very, very dangerous. And actually, the reality is that Ukraine were never going to be able to, on their own, push Russian forces out of Crimea, out of the Donbass. They're never going to win in that sense. So how do you end this without ceding some land? Here's Andrew. Tom, this is what I'm seeing. The battle lines are shifting rather scarily. We are drifting towards a matchup between one, Ukraine and Europe, respecting sovereign territory, repelling aggressive invasion, doing what they think is the right thing to do, versus Russia and the USA, wanting to get their grubby mitts on valuable natural resources that belong to Ukraine, doing what benefits them financially at all costs, including human life. The question for us Brits is which side will our government be on? John's in Enfield. John.
Oh, hello, Tom. I spoke to Matthew on Saturday about this situation, and it comes from Scott Lucas, I think, who you did an interview today. Yeah. And basically, everyone's missing the point. This meeting with Putin and Trump was a desperate act by Putin. Yeah. To get something which was critical, because you know Trump was threatening the secondary sanctions to hit both mm-hmm. India and China.
Yep.
If something wasn't done, they are financing Putin's war because I think since 2022, India has bought like $350 billion of oil.
Well, from India's point of view, why wouldn't you? Because it's cheap. I mean, it's the price has dropped out through the bottom.
Yeah, but basically they're financing Putin's war.
Yes.
Russia is on the brink of collapse at the moment because America doesn't hold all the cards. Ukraine is developing its own industry for weapons, and almost every other day they're hitting the Russians' oil refineries. Okay, so this thing won't last.
So Russia is in a rather weaker position than maybe they would like to pretend, or that certainly that Trump seems to be conferring on them.
For the next year or so, if this carries on, Russia is on the brink of collapse, and this is why everyone's missing the point. This is why this meeting happened, because guess what? After this meeting, right, Trump lifted his sanctions from India and China. So this is the real issue. He can't afford to carry on like this.
What would a win look like for Keir Starmer out of this meeting, John?
Well, I think basically whatever America does is going to be a bonus. Yeah, so it's up to Europe to step up to the mark and just give Ukraine, you know, the arms. The Donbass area, they've estimated, is between $3 to $10 trillion worth of rare earth materials. Yeah. So how would you, if Russia gets its mitts on that sort of land, how would you, you know, they'll be rearmed for the future?
And they haven't controlled it. It's not like Russia is in complete control of that region. That's why they're fighting over it now. I mean, the fighting has intensified in Donetsk very, very recently as these talks have been happening. So it's not as if they're in complete control of that right now. John, appreciate it. Thank you. And on this question of a security guarantee, if America says, guys, Europe, this is your conflict, this is up to you, we don't want anything to do with it, we'll provide some guarantee and maybe we'll send some jets in if it gets really dicey, but it's on you. That means British troops in Ukraine for a very long time, potentially. Should we be willing to do that? We are willing to do that. Are we willing to do that? Come to your calls in a few moments' time. Next.
The people who needed it are probably getting really good, clinically relevant weight loss. So I don't think this is going to be great news.
I mean, it's almost got to the stage now where you're better off asking the question of who isn't on Mounjaro than who is, given so many people are. But there's warnings now that people are trying to beat the price hikes of those drugs by turning to black market weight loss jabs. Dealers are importing the copycat drugs from Chinese labs, we're told, and selling them on social media and in beauty salons for far, far cheaper than they currently are. Mounjaro's gone up in price, I'm told, from £122 a month, now potentially to £330 a month if you're buying it privately. Jane DeVille-Almond is president of the British Obesity Society and an independent nurse consultant. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme. What do you think this price spike is going to do in terms of people's consumption of this, Jane? Hi.
Hi, good morning, Tom. Well, I think it's going to do exactly what you've said. I mean, currently, getting Mounjaro on the NHS is quite difficult because there's a kind of limit on how much they're going to slowly release it over the next 12 years to people. So the criteria for getting it on the NHS is quite high. You have to have a BMI over 40, plus you have to have, other comorbidities, you know, such as high blood pressure and things. So, you know, currently about 90% of the population who are on it are buying it off the internet through, you know, pharmacists and other legitimate people. But of course, if the price goes up, they'll turn to compound drugs, you know, which are drugs that are made very similar to the drug that you're supposed to be buying, but not exactly the same. And there's no legislation on that. So basically, you've no idea what you're putting in your body. It could be good, it could be bad, and you won't know until you've injected yourself with it.
How easy is it, one, to buy this stuff online through a pharmacy without need for a prescription, and two, to find the knockoff stuff? Is it flooded with it?
Very easy, flooded with it, yeah. Basically, if you know where to look, you can get them. You know, I mean, obviously the pharmacists or the, you know, medical staff who are dealing with this, you know, online, you have to put in your weight and tell them why you need it, but people can lie easily. You know, people are getting this stuff, as we know, who don't really need it. You know, people who want to have like a, you know, a beach body and it's ridiculous. I mean, I can't understand anyone injecting anything into the body when they're one, A, absolutely sure that the drug is the correct drug, and B, if you don't actually need it. I mean, you've no idea what this might do to your body.
Do you think, Jane, that too many people are taking this now, whether it's the knockoff stuff or the real?
I think so. I think people are losing sight of the actual issue. And, you know, I've said this lots and lots of times. I mean, I absolutely know I've worked in this area for so long that it is incredibly difficult to lose weight on your own. I know that. And these kind of drugs are very useful. But the reality is, you know, we must all start to look at the food industry, about the way we feed our kids, about, you know, going back to eating properly. I mean, you know, nobody cooks anymore.
The bottle, Jane. I mean, listen, it's all chemicals anyway. You chemically enhance yourself to be overweight because of all the stuff in the food, the xanthan gum and all the E numbers. Yeah. You haven't got a choice there. But don't worry, there's a chemical in a syringe somewhere that can undo the damage of it.
It is so sad. And, you know, it's awful, isn't it? Because when you get old like me, you know, people tend to think, oh, God, she's ranting on again about the olden days. But the reality is, you know, back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, we didn't have this problem. I know. And those kind of foods are still about. You can still buy potatoes and vegetables and meat that's fairly decent. You know, you don't have to buy all this processed food. But people do it because now they've got no time. I mean, honestly, the whole world's gone crazy. You know, they work their socks off. They've never got time to cook. They just have takeaways. They fill their body with rubbish food, and then they kind of fill their body with drugs to get rid of the rubbish food. You're absolutely right there, Tom.
Jane, appreciate it. Thank you so much. As always, Jane Saville-Almond is president of the British Obesity Society and independent nurse consultant. Be honest. You don't need to be on it. I mean, you feel great. You look great. With the jabs, you look fantastic, but you look good beforehand. Do you need this, or is this a kind of societal pressure to go and get it because it's available and it was quite cheap, but now the price is ticking up? You're going to ditch it a bit, and it's back to the, I don't know, Special K dial, Slim Fast. Is that sort of thing? I don't know. You're back on those things because it's just getting too expensive to do this, and you don't really need it anyway. Is that going to see a drop off in people taking it? Because honestly, there are so many, whether they're willing to admit it or not, there are so many people taking this, and it is a bit of a revolution. And now the genie is out of the bottle, that you can just sort of medicate your way out of not looking like how you want to look and getting into the body that you always wanted. I don't know how much the price is going to have to rise by in order for lots of people to come off it. Are there too many people taking this, do you think? Too many people using up the drugs that actually are really there for people who are diabetic, who are doing it because they just want to look good, they just want to feel good. It's a sort of body image thing rather than a medical thing now. 03456060973 is the number. Coming up after the news.
Strictly under investigation. Police are called to look at reports that some Strictly stars have been taking cocaine. I'm LBC's Fraser Knight with the details.
It's line dancing. We'll get into the details after the 7:31 news headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Ukraine's President Zelensky has arrived in Washington ahead of crucial talks with President Trump at the White House later. Mr. Trump will also hold separate discussions with Keir Starmer and other European leaders who've travelled to the US to support Ukraine. Riot police have clashed with demonstrators after one of Israel's largest protests since the start of the war in Gaza. Thousands of demonstrators gathered in Tel Aviv last night demanding a hostage release and ceasefire deal. And more patients in England will be able to get checks and scans out of hours as part of plans to improve accessibility to healthcare. Ministers say 100 community diagnostic centres are now staying open 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. LBC weather, cloudy to start for many, but some widespread sunshine developing later. The risk of a few showers in the southwest, highs of 26 degrees.
This is LBC.
At TfL, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Here comes Steve, with the satisfied smile of a man who's checking out at midday after a great night's sleep and a delicious unlimited brekkie. See the untamable bedhead hair. And if you look really close, you can see that properly well-rested glow, which can only mean one thing. Last night, he slept at Premier Inn. Get better sleep for your money. Premier Inn. Rest easy. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
As a small business owner, you've got to be ready for the ups and the downs. Ready to think on your feet, ready to be rushed off your feet, ready to make the big decisions and make the tea. Two sugars in mind. Tough. Ready to be there for your customers whenever they need you. Well, ditto. Virgin Media Broadband's ready for anything business can throw at it. Yeah, it's business ready broadband. Search Virgin Media Business Broadband.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
7:33 the time, morning to you. We'll get into the details of a reported police investigation into what on earth is going on over at Strictly Come Dancing. Lots of talk of drug use over there. We'll get into the details of that. I want to come back to your thoughts on what we're about to see at the White House. Extraordinary heavies arriving in protection of Volodymyr Zelensky in the form of European leaders as those talks get underway for what a security guarantee by the US actually looks like for Ukraine. We'll come back to that in just a moment. Let's speak to Christian May first for a business update, who is the editor-in-chief at City AM. Good to see you this morning, Christian. Let's start with BrewDog. Now, I did my bit this weekend, being in Ireland with some of my old uni mates, to keep the hospitality industry going single-handedly. But no longer for BrewDog, it seems, certainly in 2,000 pubs here. Why?
Good morning, Tom. It's good to be here. And I'm still chuckling at line dancing as a Strictly headline. I mean, absolutely congratulations. Let's take it down a notch and talk about beer, as you say. BrewDog was the original little hipster brewer from 2007, burst onto the scene. A couple of colourful, some would say controversial founders. We can come on to that. Mm. And they sort of had that great first mover advantage of sort of flooding pubs and supermarkets with their IPAs. They've had a real difficulty in the last few years. They're actually losing 30, 40, 50 million quid a year at the moment. Wow. The founder's gone. There's a new chief executive who's in trying to turn things around. And it's difficult. They are now out of 2,000 pubs across the country that over the course of the last 2 years they were in. And why is that? Well, one of the reasons is that most pubs are owned by chains, owned by brewers, who in these difficult times, despite your best efforts to support the sector, would rather sell their own beer.
Yeah,
put it simply. And BrewDog obviously knew that was coming, knew that was happening. It's why they launched their own pubs, about 11 of them, I think 7 or so of which have now shut after being financially unviable. So they are having a really difficult time. They were bought largely by an American private equity giant a few years back, 2017, I think, in a move that, frankly, watered down a lot of the punk investors, the retail shareholders that were pulled in by a kind of marketing campaign as part of this sort of punk attitude of the brewer. So I think they've got a few historic problems and they're now facing the same challenges that many other pubs and brewers are facing as well. So they're up against it.
It's all gone a bit suits and ties for the hipster brewer, hasn't it? Although the zeros are pretty good. I think they're very good.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think that, just as an aside, the caliber, the quality of non-alcoholic beer is one of the greatest innovations of our lifetime, Tom.
Do you think, really? That high?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's extraordinary. I mean, really, it was, sort of 10 years ago, all you could get was Beck's Blue that tasted like sort of flat lemonade. And now, some of them are completely indistinguishable. Did you try a Guinness Zero?
Are you joking? No. I was in Dublin. Are you mad? Obviously not.
Oh, no, fair enough. You get thrown out for asking for it.
It's to the horses that we need to go next, or at least we were going to be able to, but there's a strike.
Yeah, this is really quite interesting. There is a big tax row brewing in the horse racing industry. The government wants to equalise the rate of tax that is applied to the profits of sort of gambling slot machine companies and bookies at horse races. And the horse racing industry is furious at this, absolutely furious, to the extent that they will go on strike. Unprecedented action, I think. September the 10th, a huge number of meets at Staffordshire, Lingfield, Kempton are going to be cancelled. The industry says that the financial implications of jacking up the tax on the profits that bookies make at race meetings will feed through or bleed through into reduced advertising spend, reduced marketing spend, reduced all sorts of higher costs elsewhere. And they say this is going to be a real problem. Now, I do wonder the extent to which this could just be picked up and become, as we say in the media, a thing. Given that horse racing is one of those extraordinary things, they call it the nation's biggest sport. It cuts across all class boundaries. And I think there could be a real problem here. The Prime Minister showed his face at the start of one of the festivals at Doncaster around this time last year. I doubt he'll do that again now. I think the government are in for a bit of a battle here. Of course, this is just a tiny, tiny, tiny tax tweak in the scale of things that they have to contend with. I'm sure they're not in the mood for giving in to everybody who says, well, don't raise my tax. But they are in for a fight with this one.
So potentially tough times on tax for the horse racing industry. But for the chief executives of Britain's biggest public companies, it is boom time.
Yeah, they're doing very, very well. I know this gets some people's goat, but put it in context, the FTSE 100 is performing at an all-time high, and not unrelated to that, given the extent to which bosses' pay is often linked to share price performance, total pay for chief executives at the biggest companies is up again for the fourth successive year. Now, some people will be swearing into their steering wheels or their coffee this morning, but I can tell you that this is data compiled by the High Pay Centre, which is a think tank that doesn't really like high pay. And so just for context, but they have pointed out that the median salary for a FTSE 100 chief exec is now about £4.5 million a year, which is, they say, 122 times the median salary of the average UK worker on about £37,000. So those are the figures. The biggest pay boosts have come in areas like AstraZeneca with Sir Pascal Soiree. He's paid about 14 million quid a year. And in big defence companies, Melrose, BAE Systems, and the big mining companies. To put it in context across the pond, this is substantially lower than your average US chief executive. And in London, they're talking constantly about being competitive, retaining and attracting the best talent, got to pay what people want to get on the market. And a lot of this is linked to company performance. But it is something that some people find distasteful. Some people are campaigning against it. Other people say it's an indication of the UK public markets actually having a bit of life.
Definitely helps you get out of bed on a Monday morning if you know you're pulling in 14 million a year. Christian, thank you very much indeed. Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. Come to the police investigation, reported police investigation at Strictly Come Dancing in just a few moments. But Linda's in Margate. Linda, you want to talk about the increase in price of Mounjaro? Hi.
Yes, good morning, Tom. Well, it probably won't affect me now because I'm off it. But if I had to pay it, I would. Because it's been an absolute game changer. I was on it for 3 months and I've lost 3 stone. It's just dropped off. No side effects whatsoever.
What did you pay?
I was paying £200. I was going to a pharmacist, my local pharmacist. I wouldn't ever touch online.
No.
So I get my weight done, my measurements, my blood pressure, and I got it done at the pharmacy. I've been off it 2 months now. My weight is still just dropping a little bit. I haven't increased.
Very good.
Because I have now got it in my head. I don't need 3 meals a day. And this is what Mounjaro's done for me. I only need to eat once a day, and that's when I eat. And I don't need breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I just have something at about 4 o'clock, and that sees me right through. Proper, nutritious food I'm cooking.
So this is a whole life massive change for you, Linda. This isn't just a change in your weight. This is a change in your outlook.
Absolutely. I used to, Tom, it used to depress me, and it's always people that are very thin that say, oh, well, it's a cheat way of doing it. Well, if you're a smoker and you have a patch, you know, people wouldn't say, well, that's a cheat way of doing it. You've got a patch to help you. We progress with medicine, don't we? Viagra was never meant for what it was.
Right.
You know, it's offshoots, isn't it? And this is the same with Mounjaro. And I think it's a game changer. I really do.
If you put the weight back on, Linda, just fine. If you put the weight back on, for whatever reason, you sort of got 2 meals a day started kicking in, and then the snack started. Would you go back on it? Would you pay 330 quid? You'd go back on.
Well, two things, Tom. I'm 99.9%. I'm not going to put it back on. I've been 2 months now. But yes, I probably would. But I'm not going to go down that route. I've spent too much money in the 3 months. So, you know, it's not cheap. So to go stuffing myself again, but I've actually cooking stuff. I'm not buying shepherd's pie already made. I'm making it now.
That's the big change, isn't it? I mean, not only is it getting the weight down, well, congratulations, Linda, that's fantastic. It's the change in mindset. And suddenly you don't need massive breakfast and huge lunch and endless dinner. You just need one nice, well-cooked meal a day, and that's the way forward. Very, very interesting. I wonder how many... Can you, if you've come off it, maybe we're at the stage of saying, if you've now come off it, have you kept the weight off? Get back into the details of that in just a few moments. 7:43 the time. Next. The BBC has asked the police to investigate fresh allegations involving its hit show Strictly Come Dancing after claims two of its stars used cocaine, reports have suggested. Fraser Knight is LBC's reporter with the details of this story. Fraser, what a scandal.
Yeah, Tom, we're just weeks away from the new Strictly season. Danny Dyer, Thomas Skinner and Vicky Pattison all confirmed as celebrity contestants. But in a dramatic turn of events, it's also reported the police have been called in to investigate these claims of drug abuse on set. Now, it was The Sun on Sunday earlier this month that reported it was well known among colleagues that two Strictly stars often took cocaine, claiming one person had accused another of being off their face before then alluding to the size of their pupils. So a BBC-led investigation was ordered, and now it's reported that lawyers leading that inquiry have referred the case to the Met. And of course, it's not the first time that the show has been in the spotlight for the wrong reasons.
I do feel I have the right to say it was a toxic environment that I was in while I was rehearsing, because it was. You know, I know what happened in that room, and I don't think it's important that women feel they are in a safe space where they can stand up and go, this is inappropriate behaviour and it needs to be recognised.
Actress Amanda Abington there, speaking to the BBC last July. She was one of several women who have spoken out in the past 2 years about what they described as bullying and inappropriate behaviour on Strictly, which led BBC bosses to force a renewed culture change on the show. Now, there's a chaperone in every training session. But more widely, Tom, this is another allegation, another issue for the BBC to face up to when the corporation is already facing heavy scrutiny over its Gaza documentary, over its Glastonbury coverage, over MasterChef. Here's a reminder of what the Culture Secretary Lisa Nandy had to say when she called the Director General in for his latest dressing down.
It is important that the BBC has acknowledged that there have been a series of catastrophic failures over recent weeks. Our national broadcaster is too important for its independence, impartiality, editorial standards to be called into question as they have been over recent weeks.
Now, the BBC said it won't comment on police investigations, but previously said we have clear protocols and policies in place for dealing with any serious complaint raised with us.
Fraser, thank you very much indeed. Fraser Knight, LBC's reporter, covering that story, the family tea time show with all the bullying allegations and harassment allegations, now alleged drug use. Can I admit something that might be rather heretical in this country? I've never watched a full episode of it. Whisper it quietly, folks, but it's a bit boring. Maybe a bit of reported alleged drug use. I'm not saying do that. 03456060973 is the number. Tom Swarbrick in for Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Coming up,
we demand the deportation of every illegal migrant.
A council has said that it could not take any more asylum seekers, but has nevertheless now complained to the Home Office after it discovered that hundreds more migrants were being housed locally without its knowledge. We'll speak to one of the members of Portsmouth City Council in a few moments' time. 7:46, news headlines on LBC. Dominic Ellis.
President Trump has ruled out Ukraine joining NATO as part of any peace deal with Russia, ahead of talks with Volodymyr Zelensky later. Riot police have clashed with demonstrators after one of Israel's largest protests since the start of the war in Gaza. And more patients in England will be able to get checks and scans out of hours as part of plans to improve accessibility to healthcare. LBC weather, cloudy to start for many, widespread sunshine developing later, the risk of a few showers in the southwest. Highs of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 26 at Waltham Abbey to 25 at the A10, and that's all down to an accident. And then also anti-clockwise, it's very busy from junction 10 at the A3 to 9 at Leatherhead, and that's where a car has broken down. Westminster Bridge remains closed in both directions, and that's because of an ongoing police investigation. On the Underground, there's no service for the Circle Line, the District Line can't run between Tower Hill and West Ham. The Hammersmith and City line is suspended in Liverpool Street and Barking, and there are severe delays on the Bakerloo line. Also on the trains, London Overground's Mildmay line remains suspended between Kensington Olympia and Clapham Junction.
This is LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was a dream that became a nightmare. High-pressure sales tactics, huge site fee increases, and a loss of value have left many customers feeling misled, angry, and trapped. But the Holiday Park Advice Centre can help. Contact us today and we'll help claim back any money you're owed on your holiday home. Text ASSIST to 78900 to get started.
Hello, Holiday Park Advice Centre.
That's ASSIST to 78900.
This is LBC.
At EDF,
we don't just encourage you to use less electricity, we actually reward you for it. That's why when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power. Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week, subject to fair usage. For all T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
Train to Bedford with the crew for a music festival. Scenes!
Georgie, is this too much glitter?
Yep, lost them. But I offered to get drinks on my own. It's okay, find the flag with the DJ and cat. Oh, there they are.
Rich!
Back on the train, glitter gone, feet destroyed. Totally worth it. Oh, I can't wait to post this selfie of us. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book tickets and save one third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Save this bank holiday with Lidl. Bring the heat with 2 for £7 on barbecue meats like burgers, jumbo sausages and more holiday heroes. Only with Lidl Plus. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this bank holiday.
18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 27th of August.
Bring your pensions together with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
If I need an eye test, I don't go to Specsavers.
One thing you won't see at Specsavers is me.
Do I go?
Yes!
I mean, no. Me, I don't go to Specsavers. Nor you, eh, Spike?
Should have gone to Specsavers. Nah.
Hi, Specsavers, here for your eye test.
They come to me instead.
Come in, kettle's on. Oh,
thank you.
If you can't go to Specsavers unaccompanied, we could come to you. See if you're eligible at specsavers.co.uk/home visits.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker, just say, play LBC.
Right, I managed to upset a nation by saying I've never watched an episode of Strictly, but I just, that's not for me, I'm sorry. I just find it, it's all a bit old school. 10 to 8 the time. We'll get into the details in a few moments of what is going on at Portsmouth City Council, where they have discovered, without their knowledge, that 55 rental properties are being used to house at least three asylum seekers each. That's despite saying that they can't take any more people. We'll get into the details of that in just a moment. Matt's in Birmingham. You want to pick up on the increased cost of Mounjaro, Matt. Hi.
Well, I want to... Morning, Tom. I want to at least raise a question about the use of it, if that's all right.
Of course.
My concern is that there has been no proper discussion, there has been no examination in public of what causes of people being overweight or obese. And therefore, Mounjaro may be dealing with the symptom, but not the cause itself. And when you think that somebody can lose all the weight, yes, they feel great, yes, they're very happy, but there's no cardiovascular benefit. There's no repairing of the damage within the body from the period of being either overweight or obese.
I think there might be, actually. I think there might be more medical benefits than just losing body fat to losing that body fat. Cardiovascular health presumably gets better when you're...
Presumably. Thinner. Well, no. There's one way to increase cardiovascular health. There's one way to increase strength. There's one way to strengthen your ligaments. There's one way to perform all the benefits to the body that should yield the resulting weight. And none of that's happening. But
that's
also
physical exercise.
Physical exercise. Yeah, well, that is ultimately the way in which the body regulates its weight.
And I agree, of course. But I just think it can't be anything other than helpful in the first instance to get people to the... to a weight that they feel comfortable, and then they could go to the gym, and then they could... It's almost like we flip-reverse it, whereas before all the effort was putting in to get you to the weight that you wanted to, and it was sort of, well, I've done the diet, oh, what a relief, I've lost 3 stone, and bang, then you're on it again.
We're still on the aftertone. We're not dealing with the cause. Overeating has roots in some form of comfort being required to satiate, again, some form of psychological problem.
Possibly, yes, for some people, absolutely. Food is as an addiction, as a coping mechanism. I spoke to Big John, you know, Big John off Instagram, Bosch, the Bosch guy. I had him on the other day, and he said he ate when he lost his dad, and it was part of the grieving process, and that's what he got into. He got into eating. So, of course it can, but I think a lot of it is chemically induced. You know, some of this, the food that people are eating and consuming most of is chemically... designed to be much more addictive, and that is hooking a lot of people in. Matt, appreciate the call. Thank you very much indeed. Andy, I'll come to you in just a few moments' time. 7:53 next. After the protest seen in a number of towns across the country at those asylum hotels, a council that said it couldn't take any more asylum seekers has now complained to the Home Office after it discovered that hundreds of migrants were being housed locally without its knowledge. This is Portsmouth City Council, who discovered last week that 55 rental properties were being used to house at least 3 asylum seekers each, accommodation known, of course, as homes of multiple occupancy. Councillor George Madgwick is the leader of Reform UK in Portsmouth. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme, George. Tell us how you discovered that these properties were being used.
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for having me on. So I found out about this, well, about a few months ago, actually, to be fair. I was approached originally by a few concerned residents to say, we believe that the house next door to us is being used for this purpose. So I was approaching the council and saying to the council, look, this is what I'm hearing. Is this true? At that point, the council was saying to me, no, it's not true. We don't have any. They don't exist. They're not being used for that. So I went back to them and said, that's what annoyed me, Tom. I went back to the residents and said, no, you're wrong. You know, it made them sound like they were going crazy. And they were adamant, no, they're definitely being used for this purpose. We've got people coming in, we've got people going out. Some house reported that there was potentially 15 people in at one stage. So I sent planning officers out. The planning officers come back and said, it is being used, something, but it's being used for a legal reason, but they didn't tell me what. And then the real breaking point, Tom, was early last week, I was contacted by an estate agent. And the estate agent comes to me and said, look, George, I need to tell you something. I am absolutely incensed. And she had sold a house as an HMO that was housing local people to a housing developer about a year ago. That housing developer reapproached her and said, I want you to sell the house again. But what he had done is he had removed all the tenants that were in situ and put in migrants under this government-backed scheme. And she was so incensed that she sent me all the proof and evidence. So I went back to the council again and said, look, here's the evidence. And the council said, look, we don't know anything about this. Let's go away and have a look. And yeah, they basically went away with the Home Office to the Home Office, and the Home Office come back and said, it's true. But the Home Office didn't tell the council since 2023 any updates at all.
I know that the city's director of housing in 2023 told the Home Office, quotes, the system's capacity was such that we couldn't support additional asylum seekers. So do you know how many people are in these places, these HMOs that you've just discovered?
No, all the Home Office have said to us is there is a minimum of 3, but we all know that some HMOs house up to 10 people. So it could be as low as 3 per property, could be as high as 10 per property. So we could be looking at 500 people, we could be looking at 170, anything between there.
And what would happen, what would be the effect, what would be the response, particularly from the council, of knowing where these homes were and who was in them?
I mean, there's multiple problems here, Tom. Multiple problems. First of all, the council have a duty of care, right, to the local community. They have a duty of care to make sure the community are looked after, they're protected, they're collecting the relevant taxes, they're making sure the community safety is in order, that there's help and support and wellbeing services, that GP services can run effectively, that schools can run effectively, that transport links can run effectively. So the council needs to know where there's going to be an influx of people or there's going to be a potential of issues in these properties. Also, Tom, you've got to remember that these HMOs have now been taken off the market, which are meant to be housing local people, to not. And it's
crazy. But that's about house building. I agree with you. That's about house building. Because the Home Office will say that housing people in this fashion is actually cheaper than hotels. So and I take your point about, you know, there's a question about whether these people should be here at all or who should be here at all. But in the event that they are, is putting them in an HMO which is cheaper than a hotel better?
Is kicking people out on the streets better that were in that property beforehand? I mean, the people that usually stay in HMOs, Tom, the people, you'll know this, are the people usually at the highest risk. These are people that are usually single, that haven't got much flexible income, and they're being removed via Section 21s. They're being put out onto the streets, or they're being put into social care or housing care or into new properties. This is pushing local house prices up. It's pushing local rental up, and it's pushing the social housing market to an absolute breaking point. So yes, it might be slightly cheaper than a few hotels, but the last time I checked, I didn't live in a hotel. These local residents are being made homeless because of this.
Councillor George Madgwick is the leader of Reform UK in Portsmouth. Thank you very much indeed for your time this morning. We'll speak to a minister in about an hour's time and pick up on some of the details of that story too. Just before the news at 8, Andy's in Beckenham. Andy, you want to talk about Manjaro, sir? Hi.
Yeah, hi, Tom. It's great to hear you in the morning. Nice change. I used Manjaro for about 6 months, 7 months, I think it was. I lost 4 stone. And it's not necessarily just the injection itself, right? As much as that cuts out the food noise, and that's fabulous because I don't, you know, walk to the fridge every 15 minutes looking for food. It's the habit forming that comes afterwards. And I hear a lot of people thinking that it seems like some kind of panacea or magical injection that you take this thing, you stop eating, you lose a bunch of weight, and that's it, you get a change. You're not. You have to make the change yourself, right? And to the previous caller you had on, Matt, I think it was, who was concerned about not understanding how it works, and it's all about the gym and exercise. Well, of course it is, and that's what you have to do alongside it. But the injection, the Manjaro, helps to cut away the food noise to allow you to focus on that stuff a bit more realistically. And so I think anybody that thinks that it's this, you know, magic bullet that's going to solve the obesity crisis in the UK without actually people having to put the energy in and
Quick question, very quickly. Yeah. Would you pay £330 a month for it?
Yes, absolutely.
I think a lot of people will go with you. Andy, thank you very much indeed. Appreciate the call. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick in for Nick Ferrari at Breakfast on LBC. Coming up...
Now it's really up to President Zelensky to get it done. I would also say the European nations, they have to get involved a little bit.
Zelensky brings in the heavies for a meeting at the White House where European leaders will tell Trump, don't give in to Putin. Plus...
Palestine Action peacefully protested. They target weapons manufacturers to stop weapons getting to Israel.
One of the most acclaimed authors in the country says she will use proceeds to fund the proscribed terror group Palestine Action. Is she asking to be arrested? And the former Bond who has his say on whether the next Bond should be a woman. What?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, President Trump has ruled out NATO membership for Ukraine ahead of crucial talks with Volodymyr Zelensky in Washington later. Donald Trump, who will also meet Keir Starmer and other European leaders separately, also said the retaking of occupied Crimea is off the table. But reports suggest Ukraine could be offered NATO-style security guarantees as part of any truce with Russia. Executive editor of Politico, Anne McElvoy, told Tom, any deal will need European backing.
I think success would look like getting that Article 5 kind of language. An attack on one is an attack on all. Trouble is that if you've seen Donald Trump saying he's not really prepared to back Ukraine with any more spending and weapons at scale, you know, why would he back it down the line if Russia were to decide to reinvade? You know, does it kick the can down the road?
Riot police have clashed with demonstrators after one of Israel's largest protests since the start of the war in Gaza. Thousands of demonstrators gathered in Tel Aviv last night demanding a hostage release and ceasefire deal. Frustration is growing over plans to expand Israel's military operation into Gaza City. Speaking overnight, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu criticised the protests.
Those who are calling for an end to the war today without defeating Hamas are not only hardening Hamas's stance and delaying the release of our hostages, they are also ensuring that the horrors of October the 7th will recur again and again.
More patients will be able to get checks and scans out of hours as part of plans to improve access to healthcare in England. Ministers say 100 community diagnostic centres are now staying open 12 hours a day and 7 days a week. It's hoped that the hubs will cut wait times and improve community care. A new report claims poor training has led to British manufacturing lagging behind global leaders in robotics and AI for the past 2 decades. The manufacturing group Make UK says further investment is needed in digital skills if small and medium-sized firms are to grow. The government says it is taking action to remove barriers to growth. And more than 6,000 new words have been added to the Cambridge Dictionary, many of which have been popularised by social media. Among them are Delulu, a play on delusional, and the slang term skibbity, which can both mean cool and bad. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 reopened at 91.38. It closed down 38 on Friday. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather, cloudy to start for many, but widespread sunshine developing later. The risk of a few heavy showers in the southwest, highs of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
No one sees your small business like you do. The feeling when that unexpected big contract comes in. The butterflies. But that's the exciting bit of it being your business. And you wouldn't have it any other way. So breathe it all in. When your business is your life, we exist to help you live. Search O2 Business.
Is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick.
Morning to you, 4 minutes past eight the time on Monday, August the 18th. Tom Swarbrick in for Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Hope you find you incredibly well. Coming up,
what you're kind of doing here is barring some young people from some NHS work experience, basically punishing the children for the parents' choices.
Some of the UK's largest hospital trusts have effectively barred private school pupils who want to be doctors from undertaking vital NHS work experience. Should greater opportunity be afforded to those from state schools? Also,
it is really hard for everybody to believe that somebody would do this. That's how we felt right at the beginning. It was a milestone because it was shocking.
2 years on from her conviction, we speak to the criminal barrister representing Lucy Letby as calls grow to look again at her conviction. And
he has a powerful weapon. He charges a million a shot. The man with the golden gun.
But should it be a man? Pierce Brosnan has been having his say on the future of James Bond, or maybe Jenny Bond.
Call 0345 6060 973. Tweet at LBC. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Very good morning to you. This hour...
Don't tell us what we're going to feel. We're trying to solve a problem. Don't tell us what we're going to feel.
I'm not telling you.
Because you're in no position to dictate that. Remember this. You're in no position to dictate what we're going to feel.
Today, a rematch. Vladimir Zelensky back in the Oval Office with Donald Trump, this time surrounded by his Praetorian guard of European leaders. Macron, Scholz, Ursula von der Leyen... Keir Starmer heading to Washington to help show support for Zelensky as Europe tell Trump, do not give in to Putin. In a show of unity in the wake of Russia's success at last week's Alaska summit, the group flying in today attempt to stiffen US resolve in peace talks. The key issues, security guarantee from the United States and the issue of the swapping of land. Major General Jonathan Shaw is a former Assistant Chief of the Defence Staff at the MOD, now a consultant for MAST Security. Very good to have you on the programme, Major General. Thank you for being there. Let's talk about that security guarantee. It's NATO light from the Americans. What do we think that means? Morning to you.
I have very little idea what that means. You cannot sort of be half a defence force. You'll just get taken to the cleaners. So, it's one thing to gesture about peacekeeping forces. It's quite another to actually put boots on the ground who can actually war fight if they're called to. Because that's actually what peacekeeping means. It means war fighting.
Trump's not minded, particularly, is he, to engage American troops in protecting Ukrainian security on the ground? So it's going to be the Europeans that have to do it, isn't it?
It would seem so, yes. I agree.
And that means British troops in Ukraine for years, decades?
Well, that would be an optimistic solution in that it would imply quite a stable situation there with us being there protecting some kind of peace deal. My problem with that whole idea is that I don't believe that Russia signs deals that it sticks to because they break deals. You know, their track record suggests that they don't actually stick to any deals. So, which is why I'm very serious about this issue, that when we talk about sending peacekeeping troops or security guarantees to Ukraine, we have to be prepared. What we're really talking about is war fighting capability. because that's what you have to have, that ability to be credible and to have any effect on the ground.
So how willing does this coalition of the willing need to be in that position?
Well, it needs to be absolutely willing, if you're pushing that extreme, yes. It needs to be absolutely willing. I don't think that our nations are really wound up to this. I don't think, you know, if you're in... the closer you are to Russia, the more you're facing this reality now. If you're in Finland, if you're in the Baltics, if you're in Poland, you're taking this threat very seriously, and they are psychologically ready. I think the further you get away from that, and I would include Great Britain and the United Kingdom in this, I don't think we're prepared for it at all. And that's why I think there's a real opportunity with the party political conferences season approaching. There's a real opportunity there for all parties to unite behind a national awakening to the threat we face, and therefore the sort of changes we need to make in our society to face this new threat.
What kind of changes might that mean?
Well, it means a commitment to... It means really putting some flesh onto the bones of what the Prime Minister signed up to in his strategic defence review and in his national security strategy, in both cases where he said the first responsibility of government is security of the nation. And that security starts with NATO. That's what the papers make very clear. And if we're going to do that, therefore, we need to put money into it now. And if that poses problems for the welfare payments and pensions and all the rest, well, so be it. But if you know, the only point of having priorities is you stick with them. Otherwise, they're just empty words.
Very good to talk to you, Major General Jonathan Shaw, as the former Assistant Chief of the Defence Staff at the MOD, is now consultant for Mast Security. 8:09, Lord John Hutton joins us, Labour peer, former Defence Secretary and former Chair of the Royal United Services Institute. Good to speak to you, John. Thank you for being there for us. Many of your successes in your role as Defence Secretary, in fact, two of them over the weekend, have spoken as if Trump were an asset of Putin's. To what extent would you agree with that assessment?
Well, we'll find out, won't we, in the very near future. I mean, he said some things that are really profoundly unhelpful. Ukraine didn't start this war. Ukraine is not to blame for this war. That's down entirely to the president of the Russian Federation. And there have been times when it sounds like President Trump doesn't really get that basic reality. So it is going to be a very important meeting today. And I hope that the European leaders are able to exert the influence they should on the process, because we can't have Ukraine's internationally recognized borders changed by military force. That's what President Putin is trying to achieve.
We already have, John. I mean, let's to be real about this for a second. Crimea was invaded in 2014. It's never, ever... There was no chance that Ukraine were going to push all those troops back without British and American troops possibly involved on the ground, which nobody wanted.
Yes, but we can't recognise that annexation. And that's what that point I'm trying to make. And I think if this deal is a further attempt by Putin to simply grab chunks of another country by military force, we have to say no to that. There can't be a peace on those terms. I mean, that is just completely unacceptable. And in any event, really, when it comes to territory, that's for the Ukrainians to resolve. I don't think it's fitting or becoming for a president of the United States to tell any country what its international borders should be. That's not how international law works. And we shouldn't succumb to that. And, you know, there is a lot at stake here. And I agree absolutely with everything that Jonathan Shaw has just said about the threat that Russia poses for us in Europe. And this is the moment, absolutely the moment, where we have to make clear to Putin that we're not going to put up with this. We are not going to be intimidated by Russian force and the show of force. And as Jonathan rightly said, it will come at a price and a cost to us. But I think the question for all of us is that a cost and a price we want to pay to keep our country secure? I'm pretty confident I know what the answer to that question is.
Well, I think the answer to that question on the face of it is yes, absolutely, of course we are. The reality of what that means, Jonathan was sort of taking us through a bit. I mean, there's been lots of talk about sort of civil contingency and more people need to do some more volunteering with the armed forces, perhaps, as they're growing up, that kind of thing. Is that what we're moving towards? And it happens in Scandinavia a lot, but are we moving to that as well now?
Well, I think that'll be a political decision for the government to make. I mean, I would support that kind of mobilisation because I think we've got to see it in those terms. At the moment, our armed forces are the smallest they've been for 200 years. We know they're chronically under-resourced. It will take time to gather momentum behind reinvigorating the capabilities, the conventional capabilities of our armed forces, and in fact those of our allies in NATO as well. And a key part of that, of course, is people. I mean, yes, it's all about equipment, but the equipment is going to sit in a shed if we haven't got people to operate it. And I think we are going to have a debate in this country about how we are going to stand up to Putin and the threat that he poses and what that means for us. And I think I hope that our political leaders on all sides in the House of Commons will be honest and straight with people about the reality of the threat we're facing. It's a very serious one, recognised as such in the national security strategy and in the strategic defence review. We've just now, as Jonathan said, got to put flesh on the bones.
Do you have faith that the Labour government can cut its cloth accordingly in order to increase defence budgets, to find the people able to do it? It couldn't knock $5 billion off the welfare bill, despite its overwhelming majority.
Well, I think it's set out how it's going to fund the increase in defence spending pretty clearly, and that's coming from the overseas aid spending budget. So I don't think there's a gap in the government's spending plans for the armed forces. I think the real and legitimate question that many people will ask is, well, is that going to be enough? Are we not going to need more than that if we are going to provide a credible conventional military deterrent to the Russian aggressors? And I think we've got, of course, our nuclear weapons, but I think it's really important in the current strategic climate that we have a credible conventional military capability. And that's the thing I think we need to focus on most specifically now.
And just very finally on this, John, people will leap to notions of conscription and they'll think of the conscription as there was in the Second World War and, you know, young men being told they have to go and sign up or face some awful penalty. You're not arguing for that, I would have thought.
No.
But there's a middle ground there, isn't there? There's something else.
Yeah, I mean, I no one's talking about conscription. I don't think that's on the agenda. But you referred to the policies pursued by many Scandinavian countries, Sweden and Finland, for example. And they are real models for us to think about. I mean, the Finnish army can deploy nearly 250,000 men. We've got nothing like that capability. But the Finnish population is only a tenth of the size of the UK. So I think there is real issues for us in how we are going to stand up and defend our liberties and our values and our freedoms right now, because they're not going to be fought and defended in the courts or in the newspapers. No. I'm afraid at the end of the day, they have to be defended, if necessary, by the people who wear the uniform of our armed forces, and we've got to get behind them and support them.
Great to talk to you. John Hutton. Lord John Hutton is a Labour peer, former Defence Secretary and former Chair of the Royal United Services Institute. Now that, I'm afraid, brings it home, doesn't it? These far-flung parts of eastern Ukraine that have suddenly become sort of well-known in their house because they've been talked about for so long in the newspapers because that's where all the fighting is. They nevertheless feel quite a long way away. But when we start talking about the need for your 19-year-old, 20-year-old to do 6 months or a year's volunteering with the armed forces as part of their civil duty to the country to be ready in the event that the Russians come hoving into the... I mean, that's starting to get pretty punchy. And if one of the effects of the meeting today is that this country needs to ready itself for presence in Ukraine for a long time to come, and the possibility that Russia is going to just use this as a foothold to expand further into Europe. Are we ready for that? Are we ready to say, do you know what, part of my duty of being a citizen of this country is that I'm going to train up to be able to use a rocket launch? I don't know. I don't think we're ready for that. And I don't know that there are a lot of people under the age of 30, 35, 40, perhaps even older, who would say, yeah, put me down, sign me up, I'll do it. You're not interested. Wars for other people to fight. 03456060973 is the number. Tom Swarbrick here, coming up. We've seen the protests on the street. We've seen the arrests being made of those who would support the prescribed terror group Palestine Action. Now one of the most celebrated authors says she'll fund it. We'll get into the details after the 8:17 news headlines. Dominic Ellis.
President Trump has ruled out Ukraine joining NATO as part of any peace deal with Russia ahead of talks with Vladimir Zelensky later. Riot police have clashed with demonstrators after one of Israel's largest protests since the start of the war in Gaza. And more patients in England will be able to get checks and scans out of hours as part of plans to improve accessibility to healthcare. LBC weather. Cloudy to start for many. Widespread sunshine developing later. The risk of a few showers in the southwest. Highs of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the M25, there are anti-clockwise queues from Junction 26 at Waltham Abbey to 25 at the A10. And that's all down to an accident. And also, there are delays clockwise from Junction 5 at the M26 to 6 at Godstone, where a car's broken down. Also, a car's broken down on the M3 northbound just before the M25 junction, and that's causing delays. And Westminster Bridge remains closed in both directions because of the ongoing investigation. On the Underground, there's no service for the Circle Line. The entire line is suspended. Also no Hammersmith and City line between Liverpool Street and Barking. And the Bakerloo line is suspended as well between Queen's Park and Harrow and Wildstone. And that's all down to a signal failure.
This is LBC.
Hurry, the Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss out on up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, you can still get £50 off your electric blind order. An easy way to control your blinds. But be quick, these offers end 26th of August. And if you find the same product with the same service for less, we'll match the price. Book your free in-home appointment today. Visit hillarys.co.uk. The Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss it. Conditions apply.
This is LBC.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear "all change, please," you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Swollen gums, bad breath, bleeding whilst brushing. All signs of potential gum disease, a major cause of tooth loss. At Darwood and Tanner, our expert periodontists can help restore your gums and save your teeth. Using a range of cutting-edge procedures, from minimally invasive to advanced corrective surgery, we ensure that you are always in the best hands. For our most comprehensive, tailored and complete gum disease treatments, visit darwoodandtanner.co.uk.
Mr. Thing is enjoying a lovely summer's day. He's trimmed the hedge, he's cut the grass, and best of all, he's just had 25% snipped off his home care cover, meaning his boiler, electrics, plumbing and drains are now covered for less. Chop chop, sign up today. This offer ends soon. Search British Gas Home Care Cover. Watch out for that rake, Mr. Thing. Ouch! Too late. British Gas. Taking care of things. T's and C's apply. Offer not available to existing home care or boiler service contract customers. Ends 9th of September 2025.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
20 past 8 at the time, here come the cavalry, the European delegation, including Giorgia Meloni, the Italian Prime Minister, Ursula von der Leyen, the European Commission President, Mark Rutte, the NATO Secretary General, Keir Starmer, Emmanuel Macron, Friedrich Merz of Germany. God, they're all heading, I mean, the flight paths over the Atlantic right now, they're all heading over there to rally around Zelensky as he meets with President Trump, as the European leaders tell Trump not to give in to President Putin, which is in and of itself an extraordinary set of circumstances. But what this is going to mean, as and when this, or if this gets concluded, but what this is going to mean for us in terms of our own security at home, the effects of having to provide a security guarantee for Ukraine, as Lord Hutton was explaining, might mean conversations about taking an interest in your life, about the protection of the nation, in a way we just haven't done, really, since, God, when do you want to, Cold War? I don't know. 03456060973. Julian's in Ealing this hour. Hi, Julian.
Hello, Tom. Good morning.
Morning. Your thoughts?
Thanks very much, Tom. Nice to hear you this morning, by the way. It's great. The reason why I called in was just because I've been hearing a lot of the rhetoric from all the politicians about not giving in, etc. But I just think we need a reality check on the situation. I mean, the Ukrainians are finding it hard to raise enough troops. You know, spending in the West on GDP as a proportion of GDP for defence has been going down year on year. And I just don't see that we have either the military resources or the will, to be honest, critical will and social will to push back against Russia. So it as ugly as it seems, it looks like that a deal needs to be done.
And if that deal that deal that's going to be done is going to have to involve some security guarantee, and it seems as if the Americans are not going to leave it up to us, but might to some extent leave more up to us than they've been previously willing to do.
Yeah, it looks like, I mean, you know, we've been riding on the back of American resources militarily for many years, and it does look like it's time for us to step back up. And that probably means some sort of peacekeeping force, security boots on the ground. Again, it's not a particularly attractive thing to do, but I don't really see what the other options are, to be honest with you, because Russia is just powerful and aggressive, and it's a difficult situation.
There's been lots of rhetoric throughout the last few years about what winning for Ukraine means, particularly from European leaders. I have to say, I never quite got the idea that Ukraine, as we were told, were on a, quote, irreversible path towards joining NATO. That never sounded like something that could really, in reality, get done because of the effect that it would have on Russia.
Russia's never going to tolerate that. I mean, I think it's for the birds. I think probably the best that Ukraine can probably hope for is to be some sort of neutral territory with an international force there. And, you know, winning probably means somehow maintaining a stable status quo where the people there can survive. I mean, as unpalatable as it sounds for many.
Julian, I appreciate it. Listen, I think there's a dog that needs its breakfast behind you. I'll let you go, my friend. Thank you very much indeed. Peter, I'll come to your call in just a few moments as well. Massive, massive world-changing events happening today. You'll hear it, of course, on LBC when it kicks off. I think around 5 p.m. we're expecting the first meeting to take place. You'll hear it throughout the day on LBC. Peter, I'll come to you in just a second too. 8:24 the time. Next.
Palestine Action peacefully protested. They target weapons manufacturers to stop weapons getting to Israel.
You've seen the protests, we've seen the arrests, and now the novelist, celebrated Sally Rooney, has vowed to continue supporting the proscribed terror group Palestine Action, quote, in whatever way I can, using royalties from BBC adaptations of her books to fund the group. She is the author, of course, of Normal People, which you would have seen put onto the screen on the BBC. She's publicly reaffirmed her support for the group, which was designated a proscribed terrorist organisation by the Home Office last month. She has written an impassioned piece in the Irish Times saying the brave individuals who have been arrested, who she supports, saying, I oppose genocide, I support Palestine Action. Zoe Williams is a columnist for The Guardian. Thank you for coming on the programme, Zoe. Is this very, very celebrated author, is she asking to be arrested?
I mean, I would imagine that her arrest would be quite unlikely, not least because she's not a UK resident. She's Irish. She's not alone amongst novelists. A huge number of novelists have been speaking out against genocide, in general, and the proscription of Palestine Action in particular over the past two months, and indeed the past 23 months. You must have heard as often as I have the government rationale for prescribing yes. Palestine Action. But it often does seem to hang on. There are things about this group that you don't know as members of the public and cannot ever know, which I imagine it sounded fine in a cabinet meeting. But yes. The problem with prescribing things as terrorist action groups is if they don't look that different to Greenham Common activists, a lot of people, not just Sally Rooney, are going to be looking at them and thinking, but they don't actually look that different to Greenham Common.
Well, the Home Secretary has put it on record before, and it is indeed true, that there has been violence committed by Palestine Action at a variety of different events they've done, including sledgehammers.
I think you're talking about criminal damage there, aren't you?
Well, no. They've injured police officers as well. They've thrown fireworks into buildings where there have been people trying to escape. You know, this isn't actually a very nice bunch of people holding up placards all the time. There is violence involved here. And I just think, of course, speaking out for Palestine and rallying around the Palestinian cause is absolutely, completely legitimate. But why you would need to then say, well, it is only legitimate through this one particular group, I don't think
that is what she's saying. I think what she's saying is prescribing Palestine Action was an authoritative and kind of catastrophic for freedom of protest. Now, you can agree with that or not agree with it, but it's certainly she's not supporting Palestine Action as her only mode of support for Palestine. And she's certainly, I don't think, saying they're the only legitimate voices for Palestine. I think what she's saying is that there's a kind of wider case here that the civil liberties are at stake when governments can't make a decent case for the foreign policies they're supporting. And that's that's, I mean, you know, a lot of people would.
But no one's stopping you from protesting on the streets about the situation in Palestine or indeed the government action.
But they sort of are, aren't they? Because if you look at that protest.
Not if you don't hold up a sign saying you support a prescribed terrorist group.
Wait a second. If you look at the protest on the 9th of August, I mean, 500 over 60s. No, hang on a second. Only half of them were over 60. Mm-hmm. But 500 people were arrested at that march, which wasn't even very large. So that's what happens when you prescribe. When you prescribe a group as a terrorist organization without transparency, and when people don't really buy it, you end up sweeping up a huge number of peaceful political people in that net. And I think, if anything, you know, I think they're making a lot of trouble for themselves, because if they find themselves having to go after Sally Rooney, this celebrated, quite peace-loving novelist, as well as 250 over 60-year-olds and 250 under 60-year-olds who've got no kind of track record of violence whatsoever, then they're sort of walking into a trap they've set for themselves, I think.
Very good to talk to you. Thanks for coming on. Zoe Williams is a columnist for The Guardian. Normal People's fantastic. I mean, it felt like that was the thing that everyone watched during the early days of the pandemic, if you can cast your mind back that far. Normal People was absolutely everywhere. So Sally Rooney is beloved and incredible and phenomenal. I just, it doesn't, you know, the prescription of Palestine action as an issue in and of itself, we can have a debate about. Why then you would deliberately say, well, I'm going to help fund this organisation? There are so many organisations that advocate for the cause of Palestinians, and they don't have violence attached to them. And unfortunately, there are elements in Palestine action where violence has occurred. So why you would want to put, I don't know. Might come to that in a few moments' time. Peter, I promise I'll get to your call about Ukraine as well. Very, very significant events happening today. We'll get into the details of that in a few moments too. Plus, the former Bond, talking about Bond, who has now U-turned on his position of saying Bond can be a woman. Do you think whoever the new James Bond is going to be, do you think Bond could ever be a woman? Talk about that in more detail. After the 8:30 news headlines now, Dominic Ellis.
Ukraine's President Zelensky has arrived in Washington for his crucial meeting with President Trump at the White House later. Ahead of the summit, Donald Trump has ruled out NATO membership for Ukraine and said the retaking of occupied Crimea is off the table. Police have clashed with demonstrators after one of Israel's largest protests since the start of the war in Gaza. Thousands of demonstrators gathered in Tel Aviv last night demanding a hostage release and ceasefire deal. And ministers are promising more patients in England will be able to get checks and scans out of hours. 100 community diagnostic centres are now staying open for longer as part of proposals to improve access to healthcare. LBC weather, cloudy for many to start, but widespread sunshine developing later. The risk of a few heavy showers in the southwest, highs of 26 degrees.
This is LBC.
Here comes Steve, with the satisfied smile of a man who's checking out at midday after a great night's sleep and a delicious unlimited brekkie. See the untamable bedhead hair, and if you look really close, you can see that properly well-rested glow. Which can only mean one thing. Last night, he slept at Premier Inn. Get better sleep for your money. Premier Inn. Rest easy. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
Train to Peckham. Kids in tow. Rooftop cinema time.
6 packs of popcorn? I think one will do, Nina.
Ah, clear skies, comfy seats, a talking panda. Clearly what we all needed. Okay, everyone's seated now, they're doing panda impressions. I wonder when Nan can watch the kids so I can come back with James. Oh, just the two of us.
Download the Southern Railway app to book advanced tickets from only £8 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply, see our website for full details.
When they're away at uni and the show you all love is on telly. When you're miles apart but still laughing at the same joke. When the emojis come thick and fast.
Ah, triple smiley face and a heart.
I knew they'd love that.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. Make sure your child has a TV license when they go to uni, so they're covered to watch all TV channels and you can still enjoy all those TV moments in the family group chat.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Text 84850.
8:32 is the time. We'll talk Bond in a few moments. Why not? Here's Peter in Stirling first to talk about the situation in Ukraine. Peter.
Hi, Tom. So I've got a few thoughts about this. Firstly, I think both sides have got to be given a claimable win. Crimea, weirdly, I do actually agree with Trump on this one. Crimea is Ukrainian to me, but it is separate from the 2022 invasion. Now it's going to happen. It's 1 million dead and 6 million displaced. We need to get peace. So I think, firstly, roll Russia back to its pre-2022 borders with a promise for a 10-year demilitarization of eastern Ukraine to start with a UN-led peacekeeping force in, even if that is European powers that are going in, so it's not under NATO's command structure. And then as for this NATO-lite sort of thing that's been, like, you know, guessed at and everything, I think the way forward would be to give Ukraine the ability to train and off and go on exercises with NATO forces, but no NATO forces or exercises within Ukraine's borders, and give Ukraine a one-way ability to activate Article 5. So if it gets invaded, NATO can come in. But if someone else in NATO activates Article 5, Ukraine doesn't get pulled in.
Hang on, whoa. Peter, this, I mean, so they're not a member of NATO, but they can still activate Article 5 if they're invaded again?
But not specifically Article 5, but basically that guarantee that if they get invaded, they can call NATO in, but NATO can't call them in.
That's not going to happen.
It would be the way forward of giving Ukraine a defensive guarantee. It demilitarizes eastern Ukraine, which gives Russia the whole presentable win of, oh, look, we've demilitarized and given ourselves a buffer. It's not really a victory for Russia, but it gives them the claimable victory. The peacekeeping force would not be under NATO. They've guaranteed there'll be no NATO forces or exercises within Ukraine's borders unless Russia actually invaded. So while it is still a bit pie in the sky, I think it's a way forward that means that Ukraine can then say, look, we now have security guarantees. Russia gets to say, we've kept NATO out of Ukraine. And I think everyone, you know, it's a way forward. And as I said, with the peacekeeping force, a UN peacekeeping force would be likely. And I don't think it would result in us having conscription either.
All right. Peter, let's see where we get to. I mean, even on the face of it, of having to exchange land that hasn't been won by Russia, the Ukrainian troops still in it, still defending it, and make that in some fashion, in someone's heads anyway, at least, Russian, that's appeasement, isn't it? That's the definition of it. Jack's in Chertsey. Jack.
Hello, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, sir. Thoughts on this?
My point is mostly on conscription, to be honest. I'm 23, so on the young side, of course, and I just don't understand how you can realistically expect people of my age to fight for this country when actually we don't really get looked after. You know, most of us can't buy a house. You know, schools are in decline, healthcare's in decline. So, what's the point? Is what my point?
Jack, if it came down to it, if it's a choice between having a school system that is buckling under the pressure of SEN needs and a health service where it's, you know, been a bit difficult to get a GP's appointment, you'd take that every day of the week over not having it at all.
Yeah, but I just can't see that, to be honest, because how are you going to realistically get people to do it? Because what's the point? No one's patriotic anymore.
You know, I don't know about that.
Well, you put a Union Jack up on the street and you get called racist for it. So where's our patriot heritage gone? You know, we fought in two great world wars and did very well. But now, you know, we get told off for many things regarding...
So the defence of the country is someone else's business. It's the business of the military. And if the military can't do it, don't look at me.
Well, why are we involving ourselves in things we're clearly not capable of upholding ourselves?
Well, I think that's a very good question to ask, but it's always going to be a retrospective one with hindsight, isn't it? What happened between the end of the Cold War and now that saw us become so fundamentally reliant upon the United States for largely everything?
Exactly. What happened?
One answer is governments over 30 years have chosen welfare spending over spending on defence.
Well, I didn't want to say it, but I'm glad you did.
Do you think that's true?
Yes, 100%. I agree that's true. And, you know, especially after COVID, we've now got people who don't want to go to work, you know, or a lazy nation. And I think it all comes out as to lose our patriot, you know, or I don't know what the word is.
Loyalty, fellow feeling,
yeah, exactly.
Belonging,
you know,
identity.
There's no sense of being British anymore.
I disagree. I do fundamentally disagree with that. Maybe I'm rather closer to it than you are, Jack, but I think there is a good sense of being British, perhaps. I put you down as Corporal Jack in Chertsey. Thank you very much indeed for the call. 8:37 is the time. To perhaps the very symbol of British patriotism. But should it be a man? You can get some pretty long odds, I think, on the next Bond being female. And now one former Bond has spoken out again. Pierce Brosnan has U-turned after previously saying that James Bond should be played by a woman. He now says that 007 has to be a man. He suggested that he was excited to see if the next Bond was going to be female, but maybe has had a slight change of heart. Dame Helen Mirren has also spoken out about this, suggesting that James Bond, of course, can only, should only, be played by a bloke. Layla Latif is a film critic and broadcaster. Thank you for coming on the programme, Layla. Are they right?
I think they are right, I must say, as much as I kind of am very much sort of progressive person in like many respects. This is a time of really big transition for Bond. It's out of the hands of Barbara Broccoli. We're going now with Amazon. And I think there needs to be a sense of continuity. And there's so many kind of things that are key to Bond. And I think that the female characters in it have evolved in a way. Someone like Eva Green was one of, I think, to call her a Bond girl feels a bit patronizing because actually she was like so much more than that, a great female character. And they've had a few in the Daniel Craig incarnation. But I don't think now is a time to really shake things up much more than they've already been shaken up.
It would be too much for this nation if Bond became... I honestly think... You talk about Jack's call about eroding belief in Britain. Come on. But of course he's got to be a man.
Well, I mean, I don't think, you know, that precludes us from making great stories with female spies in it.
Absolutely.
But, you know, this one actually can just continue to be what it is, something that people go and they'd love to see the martini and they'd love to see kind of, you know, some great British actor, you know, kicking bad guys and, you know, defeating his big foes. But, like, we can also now create great stories which have female actresses in the lead and still retain a little bit of continuity with this one. I see no issue with that.
Question for you, Layla. You ready for this? This is laying down a land, chucking a grenade into the room here. Does James Bond have to be heterosexual?
No. Absolutely not. and I think he can be a cad in various different ways. He could have a little fluidity to him. Sure, why not?
Okay, next one. You ready for the next one, eh? Trying to avoid. Does James Bond have to be white?
No, I don't think so. I actually, years ago, and I think it's a shame because quite a few of the actors that I thought would be great Bonds have kind of aged out of it. I thought Chiwetel Ejiofor, who was in 12 Years a Slave, and he has that kind of debonair suaveness. Like, I thought he would have been a great Bond.
Idris Elba. You always see him on that. I mean,
Idris Elba never quite worked for me, but I guess that's the kind of the fun of the debate, isn't it? Like, you know, who is it that could have done it? And I think Idris Elba has had such a fascinating, interesting career. And now you look at Daniel Craig, all of the kind of like really interesting roles that he's taken on since. In some ways, there's a bit of a kind of issue with Bond where it's just like, oh, well, do I want to see this really exciting actor just locked into this franchise, or do I want to see them kind of make a load of kind of really, you know, eccentric decisions with the sorts of roles that they're going to take on? But yeah, I mean, for me, I must say, I really want to see Jack Loudon as from Slow Horses as James Bond. I think he'd be perfect.
You've got your pitch in. Layla, thank you very much indeed. Layla Latif is a film critic and broadcaster. I think Pierce Brosnan has finally got this one right. You can create a female spy who goes around and does His Majesty's Secret Service. Of course you can. Absolutely fantastic. It ain't going to be Bond. It's not Bond, is it? Let's be honest. And so you have the character is a man, and so the character needs to be played by a man. I know it's only fictional, but that's what the legacy of the character is. Why do we have to do away with it? Might get to your thoughts on that in a moment. 8:42. Lester's in Knockgrove. Hi, Lester.
Morning, Tom. How are you?
I'm well, sir. To real life issues of war and peace, I'm afraid, in this
absolutely
this meeting
yeah
today.
I mean What was the name of your last caller, that 23-year-old Tom or something? There's Jack, no loyalty. Yeah. There's no Jack, was it? There's no loyalty. There's no patriotism. He's talking complete rubbish. I served 15 years in the military. I'm about as patriotic and as loyal as you can get in an English subject. And how dare he come on the radio and say that people like me don't exist?
Well, he's not saying that you don't exist. He's just saying that it's very hard as a younger person to feel any sense of loyalty to a country that maybe he feels is kind of working against him to some extent.
Well, wait till he gets to my age and then he'll realise, you know, how lucky he's been to have lived and to have been born British. That's all I say. Conscription, I'm sorry. Absolutely a fantastic idea. I'd love to see it.
You're joking. No,
I would absolutely love to see conscription. I think it would do our young children of this country the absolute power in the world of good. A 9 and 10-year-old with a mobile phone.
Why would it have to be just young people?
Well, because how could you have old people in conscription?
Well, define old. I mean, every man and woman under the age of 55 is then asked told that they have to be conscripted, I think you're going to get a lot of people saying no.
No, I wouldn't put it that way. If you wanted to go in as a territorial, then yes, of course, because you've also got, you know, medical and fitness issues and stuff like that. As you get older, of course, things like that happen. But children or, you know, young people of, you know, 18, 19, 20, I think conscription should be mandatory in this country, like it is in some of the European countries. You know, we just, the young people today, they just seem to want everything. They want to give nothing back. They want to do nothing for everything they get. You know, most of it's given to them, in my opinion, you know, on a silver spoon. And it's disgraceful. Well, I'm sorry, buddy, but, you know, I'm old enough now to, you know, to voice my opinion.
Lots of people are old enough to voice their opinion on the radio because they're an adult. I'm afraid it doesn't make you right.
Well, we all have our opinions, so we have to agree to sometimes disagree, don't we?
I think with 7 times the average salary to buy the average house, I think with skyrocketing rental prices, I think with a very, very slow, I know it's the immediate, but very slow jobs market for people, huge amounts of university debt that people come out with, the necessity, apparent necessity to go to university in the first place. I do think it is much harder hitting those milestones of life that most people would say are signs of success or growing older. I think they're happening a lot later because it's just a lot harder for younger people. I do, I'm sorry. It's never been easy to buy a house. It was never easy in your day to buy a house. It was easier, though, sir, would be my suggestion. And thank you again for your service. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick on LBC, talking of patriotism.
Most people in this country are patriotic. Most people in this country support the idea of putting up the Union flag, the flag of St. George.
The Labour Council, who say that they will bring down the flag of St. George if it is attached to a lamppost, as some of those in the area want to do. We'll look at the rights and wrongs of that after the 8:46 news headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Volodymyr Zelensky has arrived in Washington for his crucial meeting with President Trump at the White House later. Demonstrators have clashed with riot police in Israel after one of the largest protests since the start of the war in Gaza. And it's claimed poor training has led to British manufacturing lagging behind global leaders in robotics and AI for the past 2 decades. LBC weather. Cloudy for many, but widespread sunshine developing later. The risk of a few showers in the southwest. Highs of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays of about 45 minutes on the M25 clockwise to junction 15 at the M4. In Westminster, Westminster Bridge remains closed in both directions because of the ongoing investigation. And also in Dartford, Prince's Road remains closed westbound from the M25 junction, and that saw down to an accident. On the Underground, still no service for the Bakerloo line between Queen's Park and Harrow and Wealdstone. Then there are severe delays on the Circle, the District, the Hammersmith and City, and also the Mildmay line, and also minor delays on the Central line, and also there are severe delays on the Elizabeth line between Whitechapel and Shenfield, and that was after a track problem from earlier.
This is LBC.
As it's free to sell in your local area on eBay, I was thinking maybe I should sell that bench press. Oh, that's literally been benched. And this guitar that I've forgotten how to play. Must be the buyer for the chest of drawers I listed yesterday. And I'm still in my pyjamas. Be with you in a sec.
With new listing features, it's easy to sell for free in your local area on eBay. Download the app now. eBay. Things people love. T's and C's apply. Excludes vehicles.
This is LBC.
The Thames Link train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family, get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, top up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P.
Do the four trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
And now the weather. Scattered showers will give way to more scattered showers, but there may be a period in between where it's just grey. It's always grey, isn't it? That's why I travel with Monzo. I can use my card to spend abroad with no fees, so I can plonk myself on a beach far away from grey and spend with my Monzo card like I never left home. Hello, Beach Bar. Now to Liam for the sport. Monzo, the bank made for travel. UK residents, T's and C's apply.
The road stretches before you, but there's trouble ahead. Stationary cars. You're faced with a McDonald's side mission. Do you A, join the ever-growing queue, or B, take the next exit and treat yourself to a glorious Mackey's?
Detouring to McDonald's.
Start your side mission today.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10 to 9, come back to your calls about this absolutely massive meeting at the White House with the President of the United States, plus others, including Keir Starmer, in just a few moments. In fact, we'll touch on that, I'm sure, when we speak to Stephen Kinnock, the Minister of State for Care and Labour MP for Aberfan Mastag. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme, Mr. Kinnock. Let us start first, though, with the diagnostic centres that are now popping up around the country, 100 of them, offering out-of-hours services, 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is a moment to mark the fact that there are 100, and how many do you want to get to in the long run? Morning to you.
Yeah, morning, Tom. Thanks very much for having me on. It's actually, we've got about 170 around the country, but today is the moment we mark 100 of them being open for 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. So it's a really important milestone in terms of accessibility. The community diagnostic centres are a major part of our shift from hospital to the community in terms of our 10-year plan for the future of our NHS. They're embedded in your community, so you can find them in your local shopping centre, perhaps in a local university, very easy to access, and they have the full range of diagnostics, from MRI scans to CAT scans to X-rays, you name it. And they really are already playing an important role. So they've played a major part in contributing to a 100,000 additional people meeting the 28-day target for either having cancer diagnosed or ruled out. They take pressure off outpatient centres, and it's all about helping our NHS to organise itself around our patients rather than people having to organise their lives around our NHS.
Who can use them?
Absolutely anyone. Of course, it's based on a referral from your GP. So it's that sort of classic case. You go into your GP and the GP says, I think there's something we need to have another look at here, and we need some tech to do it. Might be an MRI scan, might be a CAT scan, whatever it might be. And then you get that referral from your GP right into the system. And because 100 of them now are open 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, the chances are that within a matter of hours or days, you're going to be able to get an appointment that works with your busy working life to get that diagnosis. And of course, the quicker the diagnosis, the better the treatment, the better the outcome.
Can I ask you about another story on the medical brief? This suggestion in the papers that there are potential doctors, medical students from private schools who are being banned, barred from getting vital work experience at a number of NHS hospitals because of the fact that they go to private schools. Those NHS trusts saying that they're going to prioritise applicants from state schools first. Is that fair?
Tom, I'm really sorry. That's actually the first I've heard of that story. I thought that I was briefed on absolutely every single aspect of what's going on across our NHS today, but that is news to me.
What do you think about it?
Generally speaking, I think if people are qualified to do a particular job or to get a particular type of work experience, then they should be qualified to do that. And there's usually equalities legislation which ensures that people are, you know, that
so they shouldn't be discriminating based on paying for school.
I as far as I know, there is nothing in our equalities legislation that would allow discrimination of that nature, but I'm not across the detail of this particular story. But my instinctive reaction to you, Tom, is to say if you are qualified to do a type of work or to get a certain type of work experience, then whatever your background, you should be able to do that.
Before we come on to very important matters with Ukraine, let me ask you one other domestic matter. When was the last time you spoke to your dad, and did he tell you to get rid of the two-child benefit cap then?
It's not going to be up to me to formulate the budget.
Is he lobbying you?
Rachel Reeves and the Prime Minister and the Cabinet make decisions on the budget. Anything which has major financial implications for our public finances is going to be a decision that Rachel Reeves will set out in October. They're the decision makers on this and nobody else.
Is he helpful? Is it helpful having your father opine on those matters?
Tom, you've invited me onto this show as a government minister, and I'm speaking now as a government minister, and I'm really clear that government policy is the two-child cap as things stand, and also that the budget's coming in October, and I'm not going to sit here on national radio and preempt the budget.
You can fire off a text later. Let us turn to events in the United States. Of course, an absolutely enormous moment for the future of European security, the European peace. Can the United Kingdom support a peace deal that sees Ukraine cede territory to Russia?
Well, our Prime Minister and the European leaders that are flying out to Washington are really clear that nothing can be agreed about Ukraine without Ukraine. So any agreement that is reached has to be with the support of President Zelensky. That's up to him and to the Ukrainian people. It is their territory, their country. We will support President Zelensky in whatever he determines. Our job then is to have that ironclad security guarantee. We know that President Putin has a long track record of violating international peace agreements and treaties. And so the only treaty that is going to be credible and robust is one that is backed up by a security guarantee. It's very encouraging to see the United States making positive noises about joining a transatlantic European security guarantee. And that is going to be crucial, because without that, any agreement's not worth the paper it's written on, frankly, when it comes to President Putin.
How far are we willing to go to guarantee Ukrainian security?
Well, our Defence Secretary, John Healey, has been on to say that, you know, and has made it clear that we will have a very strong contribution to a security guarantee. That's going to, of course, any decision about deploying British Armed Forces personnel is a massive decision for any Prime Minister and any government. But as I say, John Healey has been clear that whether it's land, sea or air, the British will play their part, as we have done right from the start. We've stood shoulder to shoulder with Ukraine. Let's not forget that thousands of Brits opened their homes and their hearts to Ukrainians.
And we've trained Ukrainian troops for a long time, certainly since 2014 in Ukraine.
Indeed.
Could British troops be used in that capacity and potentially more as a peacekeeping force in Ukraine were it to be necessary?
Well, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, because first of all, you've got to get the agreement done, which is where President Zelensky is absolutely key. Then it's about, on the basis of that agreement, what kind of deployment would you be looking at? And it's too early to say in terms of whether it would be a deployment that is about supporting Ukrainian forces, a deployment with a particular military posture. It's too early to say how that's going to look, because we haven't even got the agreement done yet. But what is key is that the two things must go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other.
You've been in politics a long time. How big a moment is this for British military, for British security, for European security?
It's absolutely huge, but it is also part of a process. We've, of course, seen President Trump showing leadership in terms of getting these talks further than they have been since the start. But it's also a really important point you make about European security. Ukraine's security is our security, because if we don't protect Ukraine, we know that when there are people like Vladimir Putin in the Kremlin, they will not stop. They have a particular agenda. The only way to make them stop is with a robust and credible show of force.
Does the government still believe, though, that Ukraine is on an irreversible path to joining NATO?
We're clear. One of the objectives that the Prime Minister is going out with is to say that it's up to Ukraine to determine its own international partnerships, whether that's European Union membership, whether that's NATO membership. It's got a pathway. It's not up to other countries to dictate to Ukraine what it does or doesn't do. It's a sovereign country which is with a democratically elected government, and it will take its own decisions. Of course, it is then, you know, as NATO members, we also need to look at the challenges that NATO has and the overall security of all NATO members, and that's going to be in the mix on any decision about membership of any country of NATO going forward.
Bring it back closer to home to finish, Stephen. I saw that Sadiq Khan, suggesting that the Labour in government are 2-0 down, that it's not been a particularly great first year in power. I wonder if that is helped by a decision by a Labour council in London to take off English flags, the flag of St George, from lampposts from which they are flying. Does that help add to the sense that Labour is patriotic and behind the people of this country?
Labour is absolutely a patriotic party that stands firm both on the international stage and at home. And look, we're delivering the highest growth in the G7 in the first half of this year. We've knocked 250,000 people off the NHS waiting list. We're getting the total mess in our prisons sorted out. We've had tens of thousands of people who don't have the right to be in this country being deported and sent home. We inherited a complete and utter mess on the 4th of July last year. It's going to take a while to rebuild, but we are step by step rebuilding our country, and once again, proud to be British and giving the British people a country that they can be proud of.
Thank you very much indeed for your time. Stephen Kinnock is the Minister of State for Care, Labour MP for Aberfan Maestagg. Tom Swarbrick here on LBC. Coming up,
I don't think the Union flag is in any way far-right. I fully support the people that are doing. I don't think they're far-right in any way.
The Labour Council in London say they will take down the flag of St George if it is indeed tied to lamppost by protesters. Is that the right decision? Also,
what you're kind of doing here is barring some young people from some NHS work experience, basically punishing the children for the parents' choices.
As you heard, a health minister criticising NHS trusts for failing to allow private school pupils to access vital NHS training. And
the case itself, when you stand back and look at it, it's heartbreaking, and I don't think you need to be a parent to understand that.
On the second anniversary of the conviction of killer nurse Lucy Letby, we'll speak to her criminal barrister as more calls grow for a re-examination of the evidence.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Ukraine's President Zelensky has arrived in Washington for crunch talks with President Trump at the White House later. Ahead of the meet, Donald Trump has said the return of Crimea and NATO membership for Ukraine won't be offered in any potential peace deal. Volodymyr Zelensky has said he wants to end the conflict with Russia quickly and reliably. Former Labour Defence Secretary Lord Hutton has told Tom Vladimir Putin should not be given control of parts of eastern Ukraine.
I think if this deal is a further attempt by
Putin to simply grab chunks of another country by military force. We have to say no to that. There can't be a peace on those terms. I mean, that is just completely unacceptable. And in any event, really, when it comes to territory, that's for the Ukrainians to resolve. I don't think it's fitting or becoming for a president of the United States to tell any country what its international borders should be.
Riot police have clashed with demonstrators after one of Israel's largest protests since the start of the war in Gaza. Demonstrators say they're concerned a new offensive in the territory could endanger the lives of those still being held captive. But Israeli President Isaac Herzog insists that officials are doing everything they can to secure their freedom.
Our sons and daughters are there in the dungeons of Gaza for 681 days. We want them back home as soon as possible. The world should want them back home as soon as possible.
A 35-year-old man is continuing to be questioned on suspicion of murder following the death of a woman in East London over the weekend. Police say she was attacked in Romford in the early hours of Saturday and died at the scene. Two other men are being held on suspicion of assisting an offender. A new report says British manufacturing is lagging behind global leaders in AI by about two decades because of poor support and training. The manufacturing group Make UK says more investment is needed in digital skills. The government says it is taking action, though, to remove barriers to growth. And ministers are promising more patients in England will be able to get checks and scans out of hours. 100 community diagnostic centres are now staying open for longer as part of plans to improve access to healthcare. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up two. At 91.41, the pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, widespread sunshine developing after a cloudy start. The risk of a few heavy and thundery downpours in the southwest. Highs of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
With a simple search on Get Your Guide, you can discover things to do around the world. You could find yourself on a cruise of the Thames admiring London's landmarks by boat, or exploring Scotland's majestic highlands on a day trip from Edinburgh. Wherever you're going, discover tours, tickets and attractions on Get Your Guide. Start planning today at getyourguide.co.uk. Unforgettable travel experiences.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick.
Morning to you, 4 minutes past nine the time. Tom Swarbrick in for Nick Ferrari at breakfast here on LBC. Hope you find you very well this Monday morning. Coming up.
Generally speaking, I think if people are qualified to do a particular job or to get a particular type of work experience, then they should be qualified to do that.
Criticism from one of the government's health ministers for some of the UK's largest hospital trusts, who it's reported have been effectively barring private school pupils who want to be doctors from undertaking vital NHS work experience to allow for more state school pupils to benefit. Is that a fair response? Also,
they've reviewed everything and have come back with the view that no murder took place. In fact, no crime took place.
2 years on from the conviction of the killer nurse Lucy Letby, we'll speak to her barrister as more calls grow for a re-examination of some of the evidence that led to those convictions.
Call 0345 60 60973. Tweet at LBC. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Very good morning to you. First this hour.
Most people in this country are patriotic. Most people in this country support the idea of putting up the Union flag, the flag of St George.
A second council has vowed now to remove British flags attached to lampposts as part of a patriotic campaign. This is Tower Hamlets Council in London saying it would take down the flag of St George, quotes, as soon as possible after they were put up in recent days. They were displayed in the East London Borough this week as part of something called Operation Raise the Colours, which is apparently a patriotism campaign that's been gathering momentum online. Since then, British flags have been raised on streets across Britain, including in Swindon, in Bradford, in Newcastle and Norwich. Now the Labour Council has confirmed that it will remove any St George flags from council property, including lampposts, as soon as possible. A spokesperson telling The Telegraph, "We are aware members of the public have been putting up St George flags on various structures. While we recognise people wish to express their views, we have a responsibility to monitor and maintain council infrastructure. Where flags attached to council-owned infrastructure without permission, they may be removed as part of routine maintenance." Look for Rahman, the mayor of Tower Hamlets, also ordered the removal of Palestine flags from council buildings and lampposts in March 2024, but critics are accusing the council of having a two-tier bias because the Palestine flags were not taken down for months after popping up in the aftermath of the Israel-Hamas war. It makes sense to me that, therefore, if you pop up a British flag on a lamppost in a local, it remains there for the same period of time that it took the council to remove flags of any other country or nation or what have you. It's not illegal to put up Palestine. If it is illegal to show support for proscribed terror groups. So if you stick up a flag of a proscribed terror group, down it comes immediately, please, and, you know, your name is taken. If you put up a flag of another nation on a bit of council infrastructure and it takes the council 2 weeks to put that down, then maybe the same period of time. OK, you can have 2 weeks of your flag flying. Do you see what I mean? But I do take the point, and this is a bit prefectorial of me, but I do take it's a council bit of infrastructure. You can fly a flag and load it, stick it to a tree if you want. Does it have to be, are you only doing it to make the point that they let the flag of Palestine fly for 2 weeks, but here when you put up the St. George flag, it's down within minutes? Is that the point that they're making? 0345 606 0973 is the number. Narinder Kaur joins us, a broadcaster and social commentator. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme. How long should this council let these flags fly for? Morning.
Morning. Thank you for having me on. I think everyone's missing a big point here, because the fact is that the Palestinian flags, they're flying in firstly areas that are largely in majority Muslim with roots to Palestine, and they're flying for an ethical reason because there's children being starved to death there and being killed. Whereas when you see the St. George's flag, which is unfortunately, and I say unfortunately strongly, being hijacked by far-right groups. And we only have to see the race riots of 2024, where everyone looting businesses and attacking brown and black people were draped in St. George's flag. You can see why councils may feel a little bit nervous about St. George's flags going around, because it could cause conflict and make brown communities feel deeply uncomfortable. Now, what? No one's saying you can't fly a St. George's flag. You can, and you can feel prideful in your country. But this isn't some humanitarian cause. With what we've got outside asylum seeker hotels, I'd say their reasoning is a little bit sinister here.
The reasoning is sinister for flying the St. George's flag?
Yes, I'd say so right now, with what's happening in the country. Well, it's the group that's been doing it in Birmingham. They're proud Englishmen, and this is about English identity. English identity isn't under threat, Tom, but Gazan lives are under threat. There's a difference in why the flags are being kept up, possibly.
Well, people can fly whatever they want for whatever reason they want to. In the same way that you would say...
Well, they didn't have authority. I don't think they had the authority.
Well, they don't have the... But, I mean, in whatever way they choose to fly it, they can fly it for whatever reason. If you are saying the reason why the St. George's flag is rather complicated for people is because it is hijacked by certain groups to make certain political points, the same could be said of the Palestine flag, couldn't it? There are people who would wish death to Jews who fly the Palestine flag. That doesn't mean to say that every instance of a Palestine flag being on a building means that those people inside agree with that person who's flying it for a different reason.
I'd say the majority, when I see a Palestinian flag, I'd say that they're actually fighting for an ethical reason.
Again, how do you know?
Children. I'd say the majority, we do know, because they're not causing riots up and down the country, are they? However, when
some
you see
people,
St. George's
respect,
flag,
some people are committing violence under the name.
Well, they're not really. We're not seeing business being looted.
One group has been a prescribed terrorist organisation and is violent in the name of Palestinian rights.
But that's also controversial. That's not up and down the country, and white people are not being attacked as a result. You're not as scared to leave your house, are you? If I see a community with St. George's flags all over it, I'm going to be scared to send my son through that community. So it's very different. Because we had the race riots last summer, Tom, and you can't deny it. We had race riots, racial terrorism up and down the country. And now, this summer, we've got far-right groups who've organised these protests outside asylum-seeker hotels.
Non-white person flying the English flag? What if there's a non-white person flying the English flag?
I would still think that's something sinister there. I'm not saying you can't fly your St. George's flag. Look, I don't see non-white people. In all the pictures I see outside asylum seeker hotels, the videos I see, every bit of footage I see, I don't see brown and black concerned parents. Not when I'm seeing the protests and when I've seen the race riots.
You've seen non-white people flying the flag of St. George, haven't you? You've seen that, obviously.
On very nice when there's a football match, when the Lionesses are playing, and no one has an issue with that. We should feel pride in sporting events and in our country. But when we've got a situation in a country where we're at a boiling point where brown and black people are scared to leave their homes and being targeted. Just in Birmingham, we've had two Sikh elderly men attacked in a racial attack just on Sunday. So when we're seeing a country a tipping point, I'm going to go on the side that actually I'm going to say sinister when you're flying your St. George flag. And sadly, because they have been hijacked by far-right groups, people are uncomfortable. It causes tension that doesn't need to be there.
And can people say that to the Palestine flag? If someone said, I feel uncomfortable if there are row after row of houses with a Palestine flag on them.
I think they could. Yes, of course, you can feel what you want to feel. But the evidence would show that when you're seeing Palestinian flags in Spark Hills, which is majority Muslim, they're flying the flags as part of their ethical cause. They're not flying the flag in someone's face, are they? They're flying the flag in their street, in their community. These St. George's flags outside a Chinese takeaway shop and a Turkish barber's, I'd say that's a little bit, what's your intention there? They're not getting Palestinian flags. And
the people
them
in there might feel a great sense of English patriotism, British patriotism.
But that's not under threat, is it?
I think that's the problem. I think people feel that it is.
Well, you know, I would say that's the misdirected anger that with this hateful rhetoric from politicians going around and pointing fingers at immigrants, I'd say that right now, sadly, the St. George's flag has been hijacked and all I can see is being used for anti-immigrant sentiment and to cause racial tension.
Right. Appreciate your time. Thank you for coming on. Narinda Kerr is a broadcaster and social commentator. Dr. Rakib Ehsan is a social policy analyst and independent expert in social integration. How helpful to the cause of social integration might this action in Tower Hamlets now be, Doctor? Hi.
Hi. I don't think it would be very helpful. And I think if we go back to Birmingham, I think one of the main problems there was while the city council there, the Labour-run city council there, enforced this mass removal of Union Jack and St. George's Cross flags, they also lit up the Library of Birmingham green and white in commemoration of the Independence Day of Pakistan. And I think that's part of the problem, that there is a growing perception that too many of our public institutions, they're very comfortable. They're more than happy with celebrating the national history, heritage and traditions of other countries, especially countries where sizable ethnic minorities in England originate from. But there's a certain unease, a squeamishness, when it comes to the promotion of British national identity and English pride.
I'm looking at a picture here of a protest outside a hotel in Canary Wharf, as you know, potential for asylum seeker accommodation. It's a very small snapshot. There aren't many people who aren't white, and there are a number of people who have covered their faces. Now, I always think, Rakib, that feels sinister to me.
No, I think images of that can definitely come across as intimidating, but I think I wouldn't necessarily mix troublemakers, and we have seen troublemakers outside asylum-connected hotels, with decent, fair-minded, traditional people raising the Union Jack flag in their own neighbourhoods, in places like Northfield, in Birmingham. And I think if people argue that the Union Jack flag and the St. George's Cross, that's been hijacked by far-right extremists, if that's their view, then surely we should encourage decent, fair-minded, working-class people to reclaim the flag. I think that would make sense to me.
Well, you'd need to say to them, as much as you would say as to people who march or congregate under any other flag and do so for potentially nefarious means, you've got to say to the people who are causing trouble, you need to stop. You can't cover your face and drape yourself in an England flag and start chucking stuff at hotels. You're crazy.
No, absolutely. I think that in any social movement, Tom, what you want the decent elements of that particular movement to condemn the more aggressive and bigoted movements. I think that's been a problem in the pro-Palestine movement, to be honest. So I think the vast majority of people are actually decent-minded. They care a great deal about the humanitarian disorder unfolding in Gaza. But we can't deny that there are aggressively anti-Semitic elements within the pro-Palestine movement as well.
I think that's fair. Rakib, thank you very much indeed. Dr. Rakib Ehsan is a social policy analyst and independent expert in social integration. If you want to fly a flag, get a flagpole. I think what the problem people have here is what they perceive as a sort of two-tier attitude to flags. There, the Palestine flag was up for a couple of weeks on the lampposts in Tower Hamlets, and now you put a St. George's cross and it's down within 30 seconds. Oh, well, they hate Britain, blah, 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 blah. No, just don't tire. No, I think the council... Oh, God, this is boring. I think the council do have a responsibility to take stuff down from their equipment or their own things that people have attached them to. I think that's reasonable. So if you want to fly a flag, get a flagpole. Is there something sinister about flying the cross of St. George? Well, in some cases, probably, yeah. Sometimes, yes. There is something provocative, deliberately provocative, about doing it. In the majority of cases, no. So what we have, as we do with some who, with the Palestine flag draped around them, we have a similar kind of problem with the extreme minority who use it as a shield behind which they can fight whatever cause they want to fight. And it's up to the majority of people who don't want to do any of that, but who feel patriotic or feel a sense of, feel the cause of whatever it is they're promoting strongly to say, no, no, we don't need any of this. So we don't need any of your bottling of police officers outside hotels. Just stop doing it. You're making yourself, you're thugs, basically. 03456060973 is the number. Is this council, they're right, aren't they, to take them down? Fundamentally, that's the right thing to do. Get your calls after this. Coming up.
Generally speaking, I think if people are qualified to do a particular job or to get a particular type of work experience, then they should be qualified to do that.
Criticism from a health minister. Some of the UK's largest hospital trusts, who have effectively barred private school pupils who want to be doctors from undertaking that work experience. We'll get into the details of that after the 9:18, very late, sorry, 9:18 news headlines. Dominic Ellis.
President Trump has ruled out Ukraine joining NATO as part of any peace deal with Russia ahead of talks with Volodymyr Zelensky later. Riot police have clashed with demonstrators after one of Israel's largest protests since the start of the war in Gaza. And more patients in England will be able to get checks and scans out of hours as part of plans to improve accessibility to healthcare. LBC weather, cloudy to start for many, widespread sunshine developing later, the risk of a few showers in the southwest. Highs of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M23 northbound from Junction 9 at Gatwick Airport to the M25 junction. And that's where a car has broken down. Also, the M25 is very busy anti-clockwise from Junction 26 at Waltham Abbey to 25 at the A10. And that's because of an accident where one lane is closed. Westminster Bridge remains closed both ways. That's because of the ongoing investigation. The problems on the underground continue as well. The Bakerloo lines remain suspended between Harrow and Wiltstone and Queen's Park. And then there are severe delays on the Circle and District lines and also on the Hammersmith and City line, and minor delays on the Central line as well after a signal failure.
LBC.
The holiday park industry is in the spotlight after thousands of holiday park homeowners lost what they...
You've heard it in the news. Holiday park homeowners being hit with sudden site fee increases, fake resale promises, and dramatic losses in the value of their holiday homes. The Holiday Park Advice Centre could help you get compensation if you were missold. Contact the Holiday Park Advice Centre today. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
This is LBC.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
As a small business owner, you've got to be ready for the ups and the downs. Ready to think on your feet, ready to be rushed off your feet, ready to make the big decisions and make the tea. Two sugars in mind? Tough. Ready to be there for your customers whenever they need you? Well, ditto. Virgin Media Broadband's ready for anything business can throw at it. Yeah, it's business ready broadband. Search Virgin Media Business Broadband.
At EDF, we don't just encourage you to use less electricity. We actually reward you for it. That's why when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power.
Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week, subject to fair usage. For all T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
9:21 is the time. Tom Swarbrick here on LBC, and for Nick Ferrari at breakfast, picking up on the decision by Tower Hamlets, East London Borough, if you're not familiar with it, they're a borough in East London, who are the second council to say that they will remove British flags attached to lampposts as part of a, quote, patriotic campaign. Now, I went to the Open in Portrush several weekends ago. Fantastic it was. Every lamppost had a British flag flying from every single one. It was astonishing to drive through it and you could see it. And I realised it was a particular weekend because there was, I think it's marching season, so they were all out on Saturday. But the British flag was flying from pretty much every single lamppost. Now, that's a very, very different view of, maybe view of belonging and community and national identity and pride and what have you, that would allow for that to happen. I think if they started to withdraw the flags from the lamppost, there'd be something close to a riot. So that isn't going to happen. In this case, in a much more, quote, diverse community, end quotes, can you see how it might be provocative? John's in Kingswood. John.
Oh, good morning, Tom. I put the Union flag up, St George's flag. On VJ Day and VE Day. Really, to remember all the boys that died fighting for our freedom now in the last war when we were bombed for 56 days by Germany. Who stood against them? The RAF. 65,000 young men died fighting for this for our freedom. And that young man that came on said, oh, there's no future. I run a building business roughly for 60 years. We wanted some plumbers last week. A lot of my friends, you know, guys that were my apprentices work in different trades. They've got a plumbing firm, a big plumbing firm. They advertised and 20 guys turned up from, I don't know, the Labour Exchange or whatever they have to do to see if they'd like to do plumbing. The following Monday, one turned up. The plumbers now are on £300 to £400 a day. If you want to do a trade or want to work, you can make it. This business of that they can't work or they don't want to work. And I think it's a disgrace. And I'm proud of this country, of our history, and it shouldn't be forgotten.
I think that I don't know that we can say that about all young people. It might have been
not all. Not all young people. I play golf down the golf club. This guy's waiting on the tables. They've done degrees in theatre management, what's it like in media, and they can't get a job.
That's part of the problem, isn't it? Yes. Graduate routes have got to, it's like 140 applicants for one position.
Yes. There's the opportunities there, isn't there, Tom? With different things, we want engineers, surveyors.
Do you think that pride, that loyalty that you feel, is diminishing?
In
the country, do you think that that's diminishing in the younger generation because there are fewer opportunities?
I don't think there is fewer opportunities. It's changing the way we want to work.
John, I appreciate it. Thank you very much indeed. 0345 6060 973, the number. Ahmed, I'll come to you in just a few moments. 9:25 is the time. Next.
My instinctive reaction to you, Tom, is to say, if you are qualified to do a type of work or to get a certain type of work experience, then whatever your background, you should be able to do that.
Health Minister Stephen Kinnock there criticising some of the UK's largest hospital trusts who have effectively barred private school pupils who want to be doctors from undertaking NHS work experience. This is reporting in the paper yesterday, the Mail on Sunday. Who revealed that official schemes at world-famous London hospitals, including Barts and University College London Hospital, are only open to local state schools. King's College Hospital Trust, which includes, obviously, King's College Hospital, one of the largest teaching hospitals, says it gives priority to those not attending a private school, as does South London and Maudsley NHS Trust. Christine Cunliffe is a principal at LVS Ascot and author of the book Transforming School Culture. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme. Should this be happening?
Good morning. No, it shouldn't. I'm not surprised, but it shouldn't be happening. It should be a level playing field for 100% of children in this country with no divide. So, you know, it's very disappointing to read this. And I think it also appeared in the Telegraph yesterday as well. So it's quite a widespread story and one which is quite alarming for our sector.
Alarming because you feel discriminated against?
I just think it's, you know, we're in this job to teach children, 100% of children on a level playing field. It doesn't matter where you're from, what your background is. For example, I'm a working class girl from the state background. I happen to work in an independent school. There should be no discrimination of any kind against any child in this country, and any institution that is making this happen, you know, they should be thoroughly ashamed of themselves.
But the playing field isn't level.
It is level because children have got opportunity, and there should be more opportunities for those who don't know what's out there for them. I had a similar conversation yesterday.
The playing field is not level between a child at a failing state school and a child who goes to one of the most fantastic private schools there is. You know, the playing field isn't level because the parents have got cash.
But surely the problem is with the failing state school. What are they doing to improve standards there? Why should it be at the detriment of other people?
But why is it that kid's fault? It's not that kid's fault.
It's not that kid's fault, but why is it the kid's fault in an independent school that they're being discriminated against? They should sort out the real problems, and that's the failing schools.
If a child gets 3 A's at A level, having gone to a failing school, and the child at the private school gets 3 A's, same subject, child at the private school gets 3 A's at A level, who has achieved more?
Well, you can't put that out there as a question, because the child who got 3 A-levels in a failing state school, their parents could be millionaires. And I know that for a fact. You could have a child in my school who's on a full bursary because their parents don't have any money. So where's the sense in that question?
What do you mean? I just think the environment is really important, isn't it? The environment of a child in a failing school where there's, you know, violence and the teacher's never there and there's... I think could reasonably have said to have achieved more or had a harder battle than the kid who's gone to a very nice private school.
100%, but they could be getting tutoring outside of school as well. We're diverting the problem here, and that's our state schools. And some of, you know, we've got to make sure there's a level playing field, and that's all the way around, not just for medical school.
Even if it means the child who does well at state school is overlooked in favour of private school people who had had access to those opportunities?
I don't think they are being overlooked. They are getting the opportunities. I'm all for children having equal opportunity, and that's what it should be, equal opportunity.
Good to talk to you. Thank you for coming on. Christine Cunliffe is a principal at LVS Ascot and author of the book Transforming School Culture. I have to say, I don't like the idea of... but then I would, wouldn't I? I don't like the idea of private school pupils being barred from saying just because they went to private school. As we were saying earlier, the kid doesn't choose to go, the parents choose. So you're punishing the child for the decision made for them by their parents. But equally, the kid who's gone through a really difficult school where there's violence and there's all kinds, you know, it's not a great, the class size is 30 rather than 10. Should they be prioritised for access to these very coveted places at these teaching hospitals over and above a child who has had greater access to a better opportunity to go and get the necessary grades to do one of these places? I mean, probably. Yeah, probably. 03456060973 is the number. Get your calls in just a moment. Plus...
they've reviewed everything and have come back with the view that no murder took place. In fact, no crime took place.
2 years on from the conviction of nurse Lucy Letby, we'll speak to her barrister about the growing calls to re-examine the evidence that led to those murder convictions. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick on LBC 9:30 News Headlines now. Dominic Ellis.
Ukraine's President Zelensky is in Washington ahead of his crucial meeting with President Trump at the White House later. Donald Trump has said the return of Crimea and NATO membership for Ukraine won't be offered in any peace deal with Russia. Police have clashed with demonstrators after one of Israel's largest protests since the start of the war in Gaza. Thousands of demonstrators gathered in Tel Aviv yesterday, demanding a hostage release and ceasefire deal. And ministers are promising more patients in England will be able to get checks and scans out of hours. 100 community diagnostic centres are now staying open for longer as part of plans to improve access to healthcare. LBC weather, cloudy to start for many, but widespread sunshine developing later. The risk of a few heavy showers in the southwest, highs of 26 degrees.
This is LBC.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
Just like when you amplify your advertising with radio. 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
1.49 at McDonald's gets you a mini Oreo McFlurry. 1.49 on a big night out gets you...
Sorry, no trainers.
McDonald's Save a Menu. Actually get your money's worth. From 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Fees apply to delivery. Subject to availability.
At This Vet, Mia's the owner, surgeon, rota manager and puppy wrangler. And now she and her team are cybersecurity experts too.
Mia, someone tried accessing our system. Phishing scam. I blocked it.
BT Security Awareness Training turns your team into your first line of defense. Quick to set up from just £1.25 per user per month. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Thankfully, not just Mia's. Search BT Business Cybersecurity. T&Cs apply. Prices exclude VAT at 20%. 12-month minimum term applies.
Save this bank holiday with Lidl. Bring the heat with 2 for £7 on barbecue meats like burgers, jumbo sausages and more holiday heroes. Only with Lidl Plus. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this bank holiday.
18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 27th of August.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
9.32 is the time. Ahmed's been waiting very patiently to come on the radio this morning. Hi, Ahmed.
Hey, Tom. Nice to speak to you.
And you, sir. Your thoughts on these, this flag business?
I do have a couple of thoughts on this. First thought is people should be proud to wave the country's flag. As you can see from my name, I'm an ethnic minority. I just moved to the UK about 6-7 years ago.
Okay.
Where I come from, the Middle East, people wave the flag. There is no shame in that. And it's just your flag. And it's actually quite a good and nice sensation to have your own country's flag just waving around. There is nothing wrong or shameful about this. But the fact that it has been hijacked by the far right does not mean that we have to surrender to the far right. The only way for this flag to no longer be associated with far right movements only is for people to claim the flag back again. Like nationally, everyone fly your flag, because if everyone flies their flag, it no longer belongs to a certain elite. It just belongs to everyone. My second problem with that is when councils tend to take decisions like this, they easily play in the hands of the far-right groups, because what they do is that they take those posts, they go on Twitter, all the bots start saying, oh my God, look at that, they hate our country, and they start adding more fuel to the hatred. So it's kind of very counterproductive, to be honest, about what they're doing. At least that's what I think.
How do you distinguish between someone flying the flag as a well-meaning patriot and someone doing it because they are using it as a tool to bring out their racism?
Once everyone popularizes using the flag, this question no longer means anything, because the flag is there. Whether a racist has raised it up or a patriot, someone who's proud to be British raised it up, it wouldn't make any difference because the flag is there. So once you popularize using it, you take away from the far right the power that they have over the flag. Mm. People need to claim it back from them. It's not only the far rights and the skinheads who have the right to wave the flag. Everyone has the right to wave the flag. Yeah, your previous caller, the old gentleman who's saying that he flies the flag on D-Day in remembrance for all the people who died for the country, he's a very good example of what people should be doing.
All right. Ahmed, I appreciate it. Thank you very much indeed. 03456060973 is the number. Simon, I'll get to your call in just a few moments. First,
it is really hard for everybody to believe that somebody would do this. That's how we felt right at the beginning. It was a milestone because it was shocking.
2 years on from the conviction of nurse Lucy Letby, there have been growing calls for a re-examination of the evidence that led to her murder convictions. With the Criminal Cases Review Commission now saying that an application about the review of evidence has been received and that a review has begun. You've heard of politicians, whether it's the Conservative MP David Davis or the former Health Secretary and Foreign Secretary and Chancellor Jeremy Hunt, who's saying maybe there does need to be a review of the evidence that led to the conviction of the killings that Lucy Letby is convicted of. Mark McDonald is her criminal barrister of Furnival Chambers, representing Lucy Letby. Thank you for coming on the programme, Mark. What new evidence is being presented to show what you believe is to be the case, that Lucy Letby is innocent? Morning.
So there's 26 separate experts that have drafted reports, some of them joint. So there's one report, which is a joint report of seven experts, some of them separately, across the world, international renowned experts on neonatology that have looked at all the medical notes, all the expert reports on the prosecution, the transcripts of evidence that went before the trial, and have come to a firm conclusion that no crime was committed.
Well, they provide, yes, because I watched that press conference some time ago now, they provided details on how it might be that those children died of natural causes or indeed mistakes made by consultants and what have you. As I understand it, the difficulty that you've got is that none of that is actually new. All that information was available at the time.
Yes, so you're absolutely right. The way that our criminal procedure works in this country is that one of the tests as to whether fresh evidence can be admitted before the Court of Appeal to challenge the safety of the conviction is, why wasn't this called at the trial, by the original defence team? That's a hurdle that I have to overcome. And the way that I've approached it is not simply by going down the road and finding another expert, but by going to the best in the world, the people that wrote the book, not the people that read the book and gave evidence, the people that wrote the book, to say, you just got all this wrong, that the interpretation that you have placed upon these medical notes is simply wrong. And it's important on
the... Why wasn't that called at the time, Mark? Sorry to interrupt. It's a question for her former lawyers, I guess. If this evidence existed at the time that she was convicted, why on earth wasn't it heard in court?
No, I as you may know, I was instructed last September.
Yes, I know.
I was not the trial lawyer. I wasn't
not ripping your hair out going, oh, my God, all this apparent swathe of evidence that says this, that, and the other wasn't available or didn't get called to trial?
Yeah, I think you're right. It could be frustrating, but that's not the focus of my attention. The focus of my attention is understanding what the criminal procedure rules are in this country in relation to challenging convictions. And to see, well, how can I overcome that hurdle? And the best way, it seemed to me, is not to go what one would refer to as expert shopping, but to go to the best in the world. And it's important that one looks at the experts that have come forward. And remember this, first of all, it wasn't me that went to the international experts and say, help Lucy. It was them that came to me and said, right, we can see what's happened here, we want to objectively look at this, and they put the panel themselves together and to look at
yes.
it. But they said this, and it's an important caveat, if we find that she has done something wrong, we've got to be allowed to publicly say that. So you know, from the approach, you know, from right from the beginning, A, they were the people that came forward to us, and B, we knew that if they found something that they didn't agree with, they would say it publicly.
So what are you going to do, or what have you been doing, in order to get evidence that is not new, nevertheless taken into account for any potential retrial or review of her convictions?
Yes. So for any listener who probably hasn't engaged on this issue, and Lucy Letby, we've got to remember there was no direct evidence, there was no forensic evidence, there was no CCTV, no one ever saw her do anything wrong. The whole of the case was based upon the interpretation, a hypothetical, an educated guess by the experts that were called at trial. We are challenging the competency, certainly of the lead expert that was called at trial. And so what I've done and what I've tried to do is to get the best in the world, the people, as I say, who wrote the book, that's published papers, that have said, that have looked at everything and said, you just got it wrong. We've got to remember that the lead prosecution expert, as far as I know, has not published one paper or written one book on the area of neonatology. In fact, he wasn't even a neonatologist. Compared to the experts, the international experts, these are head of departments in Harvard, Tokyo, Canada, Sweden, Germany. They're from all over the world that wrote the books that have published thousands of papers on the issue of neonatology, that have looked at everything and said, no, you've got it wrong. Your hypothetical theory that was put to the jury is simply an error. Children died of natural causes.
Yes.
These babies, these neonates, these vulnerable children died of natural causes. There's no crime that's been committed here.
Let me put this to you, Mark, just before we finish, because this is a view that I've heard before, but it'd be interesting to put it to you too. I've had it from a couple of listeners here. If Lucy Letby were not white, blonde and blue-eyed and a woman, there wouldn't be this discussion. This case would not be being looked at in this fashion. It's because the type of person she is that people are taking it seriously.
I mean, that angle is, I've heard that said before, and we've got to remember that this was a widely publicised trial right from the beginning. On every major news agency, and when she was convicted, it was all over the country. Why was it that when she was convicted, and now we're talking about it, and those opinions I think are valid opinions. However,
you think it's valid?
I think they're valid opinions.
Ah.
I think they're valid to have them. However, the Birmingham Six, the Guildford Four, the major miscarriages of justice in the '80s. There were welding actions, there were documentaries, it was on the front page of every major newspaper. They weren't white, blonde, attractive women, or they were, you know, six men from Birmingham or six men from Ireland, sort of working class men that were arrested and put on trial. So I think when it comes to injustice, when it comes to miscarriages of justice, the country want to know what's gone wrong.
Yeah.
Want to say, well, has anything gone wrong? And I think that the spotlight has been shown on this because this was the biggest, most high profile trial in our country in the criminal justice history. Right. And if I'm right, if these international experts are right, then it means that something has gone severely wrong in our justice system.
Really appreciate your time. Mark McDonald is a criminal barrister with Furnival Chambers representing the convicted killer, Lucy Letby. Gary's in York. Gary, you want to pick up on what you've just heard? Hi, sir.
Hi. Yeah, basically, my view is this. I've been a nurse for 40 years in critical care areas and things like that, and I've worked in organisational development and things like that. Basically, we need to start from first principles. Okay. If you look at the situation, that building that the babies were cared for in was sick. There were horrible bugs in the water.
There were, yeah.
The air wouldn't probably be full of viruses, et cetera, et cetera. Put into that, a perfect storm begins to brew when you've got not enough staff that aren't correctly trained, and that's not enough staff in the nurses who didn't get the training that they needed, and you've got consultant clinicians that may or may not have had the skills to look after the critically ill babies that unit was taking at that time. Therefore, I think we need to start from first principles again. The first thing I'd do is I'd get Lucy Letby out of prison. I'd put her in a hotel where she could see her family.
She's a convicted multi-murderer, Gary. I don't think, unless you overturn the conviction, there's no reason to take her out of prison, unfortunately.
All right. Okay, I'll differ there. But what we need to do is we need to examine the evidence in a systematic and logical way, and that to me,
that's happened. That's the court case. They did it. The lawyer was saying, there is no new evidence. There is just a different interpretation of the stuff that already existed.
But that's according to to the medical specialist. And where I worked in my hospital, we had a medical specialist with a world renowned professor who was discredited on his statistical evidence. I think we need to go through what we normally do in healthcare. Is we have something what we call NICE guidelines, which are the way we do things, and that's born out of science from the Cochrane Review Panel, which is a panel of experts, an international panel of experts from around the world that review peer-reviewed scientific papers and make healthcare decisions on treatment, etc.
All right. Gary, thank you. I'm going to shock you here. I'm not a lawyer. I'm also not a neonatologist. So I don't know. But the evidence as presented by the experts that Mark McDonald cited does seem very thorough. And the experts that are looking at that evidence are genuinely world-renowned, proper peer review. I mean, proper people. So there's a real difference of opinion here about what may have led to the deaths of those children. And if it's a, if it ends up being that because the evidence is not in that sense new, just the interpretation is new, that means that the case can't be looked at again, I do think that is a problem. I do think it's a problem to say, well, the lawyers were having a bit of an off day and they didn't bring a so prison for the rest of your life. I think that's an issue. So maybe it does need to be looked at again. Get to more of your thoughts in a few moments' time. Talk about the situation in Tower Hamlets with the flags as well in just a few moments. 9:46, news headlines first. Dominic Ellis.
President Trump has ruled out Ukraine joining NATO as part of any peace deal with Russia ahead of talks with Volodymyr Zelensky later. Riot police have clashed with demonstrators after one of Israel's largest protests since the start of the war in Gaza. And more patients in England will be able to get checks and scans out of hours as part of plans to improve accessibility to healthcare. LBC weather, cloudy to start for many, widespread sunshine developing later, the risk of a few showers in the southwest. Highs of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. So many problems on the underground. The Bakerloo line remains suspended between Harrow and Wealdstone and Queen's Park. And there are severe delays on the rest of the line. Also, severe delays on the District line and minor delays on the Central and Circle and also on the Hammersmith and City. And also minor delays on the Elizabeth line between Whitechapel and Shenfield. On the roads, the South Circular Road is closed in both directions at Balham. And that's all down to an accident. In Mitcham, Western Road is closed both ways and Westminster Bridge remains closed both ways because of an ongoing police investigation. Very slow on the North Circular Road, westbound to Staples Corner, and that's where a lorry has broken down.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, Lewis Goodall.
A moment of truth for Ukraine in Washington. Is Trump about to sell out all of Europe?
Lewis Goodall on LBC.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, drop up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Hurry, the Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss out on up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, you can still get £50 off your electric blind order. An easy way to control your blinds. But be quick, these offers end 26th of August. And if you find the same product with the same service for less, we'll match the price. Book your free in-home appointment today. Visit hillarys.co.uk. The Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss it. Conditions apply.
Would anyone like some Bourneville dark chocolate?
Is it so dark the aftertaste lasts for a week?
No.
Does it taste really, really complicated?
What?
Is it saturated in nibs?
So dark it comes with a therapist.
To the uneducated palate, does it taste like burnt tyre?
Would scientists compare the taste to dark matter?
Is it artisanal, in all caps?
Other tasting notes, gloom.
No, no pretentiousness, no complexity, no bitterness. Just smooth dark chocolate from Cadbury. Cadbury Bourneville, made to be enjoyed, not endured.
At EDF, we don't just encourage you to use less electricity, we actually reward you for it. That's why, when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power. Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week, subject to fair usage. For all T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
Save this bank holiday with Lidl. Bring the heat with 2 for £7 on barbecue meats like burgers, jumbo sausages and more holiday heroes. Only with Lidl Plus. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this bank holiday.
18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/lptv. Offer ends 27th of August.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. With Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10 to 10 the time. Lewis Goodall with you here after the news at 10 o'clock on LBC. Massive day. I mean, genuinely, could be era-defying. You never know what's going to happen at the White House meeting as Trump and Zelensky get together. Zelensky bringing his sort of Praetorian guard in the form of European leaders who are there to back him up, including our own Keir Starmer heading to Washington. I can bring you this from President Zelensky, who has touched down in Washington, D.C. now, writing a post on X saying, "We all share a strong desire to end this war quickly and reliably, and peace must be lasting. I am confident that we will defend Ukraine, effectively guarantee security, and that our people will always be grateful to President Trump, everyone in America, and every partner and ally for their support and invaluable assistance." End statement on X. Well, you can see why he's saying that. Get the fact that you've thanked the president in early before you go into the Oval Office, and he barracks you again, or his sidekick, J.D. Vance, barracks you again for not saying thank you. Well, he's done it. He did it in the meeting anyway. But here he is in black and white, hours beforehand, saying thank you to the president and to the American people. That meeting underway, 5 o'clock our time here in the UK. That's when the European leaders arrive. Zelensky is going to be greeted by Trump about an hour later. But you know how these things move around with the president of the United States. Huge, huge day. Keep it on LBC. Simon's in Exeter. Let's come back to the flags in Tower Hamlets. Simon, hi.
Hi. Just three quick points. Flag of St. George are being sullied by the far right, so I can understand why the council is worried about it. I was on, opened a Twitter account for the first time.
How long ago?
Last week.
Oh my God. Why?
I'm a white male. Oh, I wanted to watch skateboarding videos, stuff like that.
Sure.
And I'm a white male, 58 years old, and on my newsfeed there was nothing but people with a flag of St. George in the background moaning about immigrants. I was blocking that feed because birds of a feather want to flock together, because I don't like seeing that sort of thing. Kept blocking it, kept getting it. So I've deleted my Twitter account. So there's something sinister going on with Twitter for a start. Just a final point. I mean, that councillor that got found not guilty for inciting violence against the far right, why was Nigel Farage the only one that was the talking head on it? I mean, they've asked him because he is far right. No one else was asked an opinion on it. It was Nigel Farage.
What defines Farage?
He's a Nazi. He's a Nazi.
Nigel Farage is a Nazi.
He's a Nazi. His rhetoric is far right national socialism,
I'm not here to defend Nigel Farage. God knows he's big enough and ugly enough to do it himself. But give me an example. Give me an example that informs your opinion that he's a Nazi, of something that he said that is.
What about the posters that they had just before Brexit with tens of thousands of brown people coming across the border and warning us of that and that happening? I mean, he was the only one to be asked which was wrong. I totally disagree with what he said, what he inferred.
Mm-hmm.
But he was the only one that was asked.
Well, I don't think he's the only one that's asked, to be fair. I think there are lots of other people who would ask, but his view is but potentially interesting because of the position he holds. There's a lot I disagree with Nigel Farage on, a huge amount I disagree with Nigel Farage on. I just don't think he is a neo-Nazi. Simon, that might be wishful thing. I just don't believe it from what I've heard and seen of him over many, many, many years. Simon, thank you very much indeed. Scott's in Glasgow. You want to come back to this private school debate, Scott? Hi.
Hiya. I don't see anything wrong with a publicly funded institution, the NHS, giving preference to children from another publicly funded institution, our own schools.
But the private school parents are also paying for those publicly funded institutions.
Absolutely, but they're also paying for their private schools. So why should they get preference?
It's about equality.
Why, No, it's not equality. A private school gives a massive network of opportunity for any child that goes anywhere near it. And I'm sure, I'm standing right outside a private hospital right now, I am sure the children in those institutions have a wide enough network and people within that environment to get an internship into a private hospital in the area. Public schools giving preference to people from, institutions giving preference to people from schools that don't have to pay for it, I think is correct.
No, don't like it. If you're going purely on the basis of public institution, publicly funded by non-fee-paying parents, the fee-paying parents are also paying for that institution.
Yeah.
So why can't the fee-paying parents have access to that institution for their child? They are also...
Because the qualifying characteristic is
you're paying, well, private school parents are too.
Because the private school parents are already getting access to an extended and massively important network by being part of that private school.
I genuinely think this is a major, major misnomer. There are lots of schools, the big ones that you've heard of, where the old boys network or the old pupils network probably still exists. But I'm telling you, for the overwhelming majority of private schools, there isn't a kind of secret handshake or calling card that you can just deliver that allows you access into this institution. There just isn't. It doesn't happen.
I worked for 15 to 20 years in investment banking, the technology side, and trust me, the calling card to get in there is, are you part of a private school?
If it's state education,
your chances of getting anywhere near it are zero.
Well, maybe we approach this from different... Because, as you know, I am slap bang in the middle of the most hated people in Britain. I went to a private school. I went to Cambridge. I worked for the Tories. I realised that what that does to someone. But I've never been in an instance where someone's, I think, professionally said, oh, yes, you must get a leg up because you went to this particular school. Genuinely,
I've been in an instance where someone actually told me to hide the fact that they hadn't gone to a private school because it would endanger their career if they didn't.
Interesting. Well, maybe it's different. Maybe it's different in different industries. I'll absolutely have to cede that ground to you, Scott. But I've never seen it myself personally. Thank you very much indeed for the call, Matthew's in Heathrow. Just before we finish on this massive day at the White House, Matthew, your thoughts?
Hi. Yeah. I mean, I believe to get a lasting peace, we've actually got to get Ukraine to cede some land, but not to Russia. We need a strip of land, what will be like a buffer zone between Russia and Ukraine, and say, give it to the Vatican. They could have Swiss guards, what are neutral, and we could actually offer it to refugees from Gaza, voluntary to go there, or even from anywhere around the world.
A demilitarized zone is what you're asking for.
Yeah, and with independent Swiss guards, you know, even the size could be agreed with Ukraine.
Well, I think where we're at with any peacekeeping force, as we started the program with, is that peacekeeping force is going to have to fight. So you've got to be war ready. Is Europe ready to be that force that provides that war readiness if and when a deal is made? Matthew, I've got to leave it there. Really appreciate your calls today. Thank you very much indeed. I'm back tomorrow at 7 o'clock. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back both on Catch Up, on Global Player and the new LBC app. There's all the bits. Latest news, opinion, news categories in the order you want. Pause and rewind the whole thing. Maybe fast forward it as well one day. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store. Now, coming up at 1, it's Sheila Fogarty. Next, Lewis Goodall.
Poor old Pope Leo, Tom. Hasn't he got enough to deal with? Poor guy. This could be the most important day for European security since the fall of the Berlin Wall. Concert of Europe gathering in North America, in Washington, D.C. specifically, a continent of leaders gathering in the White House to flank Volodymyr Zelensky, but also to kiss the feet of Donald Trump, desperately trying to persuade him that it is not in his interest to cede ground to Russia, and indeed it is not Ukraine which is the impediment to peace. Boris Johnson, at the start of this terrible war, said Russia's invasion must fail and be seen to fail. At the end of today, will that be the case? Are the rules of international statecraft about to be rewritten, that might is right with the seal of the President of the United States?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, President Trump has ruled out NATO membership for Ukraine ahead of crucial talks with Volodymyr Zelensky in Washington later. Donald Trump, who will also meet Sir Keir Starmer and other European leaders separately, said the retaking of occupied Crimea is also off the table.
but reports suggest that Ukraine could be offered security guarantees as part of any truce with Russia. Speaking to LBC this morning, Government Minister Stephen Kinnock has warned that Vladimir Putin has a history of violating agreements.
The only treaty that is going to be credible and robust is one that is backed up by a security guarantee. It's very encouraging to see the United States making positive noises about joining a transatlantic European security guarantee. And that is going to be crucial, because without that, any agreement's not worth the paper it's written on, frankly, when it comes to President Putin.
Despite the planned talks, fighting has continued between Russia and Ukraine. Officials in Kharkiv say Russian drones have killed at least three people overnight. Riot police in Israel have clashed with demonstrators outside the headquarters of the Prime Minister's Likud party. Thousands of people have been protesting against the war in Gaza, demanding a deal for a ceasefire and release of hostages. Benjamin Netanyahu has criticised the protests, though, saying they will only harden Hamas's stance. It's claimed poor training has led to British manufacturing lagging behind global leaders in robotics and AI for the past two decades. Make UK says further investment is needed in digital skills if small and medium-sized firms are to grow. Seamus Nevin is from the manufacturing group behind the report and has spoken to LBC News.
We found when speaking to British manufacturers that in the past, there have been incidences where a company has adopted a new technology but hasn't necessarily had the skills in-house to optimise use of that technology. And therefore, the investment, the return on investment hasn't been what they expected. So if we continue to fall further and further behind in terms of technological adoption, we'll also fall further and further behind in terms of economic growth and living standards and wages too.
The government says it is taking action to remove barriers to growth. A new figure suggests eight pubs shut their doors for good across the UK every week over the first half of 2025. Official government data shows 209 were demolished or converted for other uses in the 6 months to June. Reasons cited for closure include rising tax and labour costs. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up a point at 91.40. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, widespread sunshine will develop after a cloudy start. The risk of a few heavy and thundery downpours in the southwest. Highs of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Managing your business is a big task. To then stay on top of the numbers as well, you're only human. That's why the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform supports your business growth as the number one recommended cloud accounting software. Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals. Verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Lewis Goodall.
Well, a very good morning to you. It's Lewis Goodall sitting in for the great James O'Brien all this week here on LBC. The time is 10:03, and we could be facing an inner day which we look back on as a pivotal one. A pivotal one, certainly in the long conflict now of the Russia-Ukraine war, going on for 3.5 years, but in reality going on for 10 years since 2014 and the invasion of Crimea, and really, in one sense or another, unfolding since the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989 and the collapse of the USSR in 1991. When historians look back on this period, I'm sure that they will conclude that the Ukraine war was part of a thread and a tapestry of European history, of unsolved problems since the fall of the USSR. Because, of course, since the collapse, and that was an extraordinary event. Sometimes we look back and we think of it just as inevitable. It was not inevitable. We had never before seen a political entity of that size, a superpower, collapse pretty much without a shot being fired. Mikhail Gorbachev, the last chairman of the USSR, could be said to have should take a lot of credit for that. It could have been very different. It could have been like China and Tiananmen Square, where a communist regime decided to try and cling on by its fingertips down the barrel of a gun. That did not happen. The USSR collapsed. It, in the end, collapsed into a series of successor states. And that is why we've ended up at today, because some people, including, and most importantly of all, Vladimir Putin, never got over it. Never got over the humiliation, as they saw it, of the USSR choosing to scuttle itself into the history books without so much as a fight, We look at it as a moment of triumph for the West, for liberalism, for democracy, all of those states which had been kept strangled, their aspirations strangled, people who were not allowed to have their own nation because of people's ambition, people like Stalin, despots, deciding to try and keep these nations under the foot in the yoke of Soviet communism. We look at that as a triumph. There are people, including Putin, who see it, as I say, as a complete humiliation. He was stationed as a junior KGB officer in Dresden, in what was then East Germany, as he saw with horror, watching these nations, which had been suppressed by his own people and his own government, rise up and take their independence. That is ultimately what today is about, what Ukraine is about, what the invasion was about in 2014 and 2022. It is about Putin trying to reclaim some of what he sees as the honour and glory of Russian days and years past. It is about the difference between colonialism, imperialism, and the rights of nations to set their own future. The truth is that people like Vladimir Putin have never accepted the right of states like Poland, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, and Ukraine to chart their own course. And the long history, the 30 years or so since the fall of the USSR, has been about Russia and about Putin in particular doing what he can to try and address what he sees as the historical wrong and humiliation of the collapse of the USSR. He cannot in his bones accept that the Ukrainians are a free and independent people with the right to choose their own future, whether that's with the West or with the Russian East. And the fact that so often they have elected, literally and figuratively, to choose the West, to choose the EU, to choose NATO, to choose Europe over the East, he cannot comprehend. He believes every time they do that, that it must be some bit of trickery, some bit of political mastery that the Europe is trying to pull off in some way, some dirty tricks. It is not. What he cannot accept is that these people have chosen or want to choose to be in a different club to Russia, because honestly, why would they not? Why would they choose autocracy and kleptocracy and oligarchy over democracy, freedom, and the rights of self-determination? That is what today is about. And what is worrying, and what we must worry about, and the thing that I go in today to with some trepidation, and I think this is why so many European leaders have chosen to decamp, to break up their summer holidays, to do something completely unprecedented, which is to descend en masse, basically to a meeting that was not even their own, to go to Washington, D.C. I think those European leaders are worried that Donald Trump, who I will give some credit to in I think being genuine in wanting to end the bloodshed, but is worried that Trump will do that at any cost, that he has been persuaded by Vladimir Putin that it is not Europe and Ukraine that is the problem here, that it is Russia that is not the problem, it is Europe and Ukraine which is the impediment to peace. That is what we're fighting here. That is what today is about. It is about two competing visions of history and two competing visions of the future. To give you an idea about what I mean about that Russian interpretation of history, some of you may have heard my show yesterday, Sunday with Lewis Goodall on LBC from 10 till 12. You know, I'll get the plug in. I spoke to Alexander Vasilev. Vasilev is a former KGB officer. I put some of these points about the rights of Ukrainian self-determination to him. This is part